Coming up on Boston Public Radio, the Democrats are calling the Senate health bill a tax cut for the rich at the expense of the poor. President Obama says there is a fundamental meanness at the core of the legislation. Rand Paul is frustrated by it because it's Obamacare light. We're opening the lines and asking you what you think about the legislation that could punish the old and poor and leave millions out of health care. Then at noon, it's Emily Rooney with her fantastic list of observations and complaints.
And I'm Jared Bowen, and for Jim Browdy, the Congressional Black Caucus says thanks, but no thanks to President Trump turning down an invitation to meet with him at the White House. Is this going to backfire, or will it force the president to pay closer attention to their concerns? Callie Crossley joins us for that. From there, it's award-winning writer Sherman Alexie, whose latest book tries to make sense out of his mother's life and their relationship. That's all next on Boston Public Radio.
From a transmitter atop Great Blue Hill, this is WGBH, live, local talk, Boston Public Radio.
I am Marjorie Egan. This is Boston Public Radio. Jared Bowen, Executive Arts Editor at WGBH, is filling in for the still vacationing Jim Browdy. Where in the world is Jim Browdy? We have no idea, but we are here at the Boston Public Library, where we broadcast every Tuesday and every Friday. You should come down. It's a beautiful day.
I know. It's a great, beautiful day here at the library. My last day before handing the scepter back to Jim Browdy.
I know, but you'll be back. You'll be back. Anyway, Jim is going to be back on Monday. That is true. But we're going to talk about health care. America is apparently no country for old women or men, particularly if you are poor. That's one of the many things you can glean from the Senate's health care bill. Democrats are characterizing it as a tax cut for the rich at the expense of the poor, and it's not rhetoric. It's right. The bill cuts subsidies, which lower income people use to buy health insurance. The bill makes deep cuts in Medicaid, which most Americans use if they wind up in nursing homes. But the bill funds a considerable tax cut for the rich and for the healthcare industry. A new NBC Wall Street Journal poll, which comes out just as the Senate was unveiling their bill, finds that Americans overwhelmingly disapprove of the House plan to repeal and replace Obamacare. By a 3-1 margin, the American public has a negative view of the American Health Care Act. But does any of this matter? Is there anything that a majority of Americans who oppose this bill can do to stop it? Our number is 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. Our email is bpr@wgbh.org. The protesters swarming around Mitch McConnell's office yesterday, many of them sick and disabled and in wheelchairs. Is that going to make a difference? Is President Obama's statement that there is a fundamental meanness at the core of this legislation going to change anything? In Massachusetts, where we have no legislative muscle on this issue, do you feel like you're watching something catastrophic playing out in slow motion that you are just powerless to stop? 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. It looks mean and meaner to me. I mean, it does look like... I mean, that is the other question. There's sort of a moral issue here, I think. I mean, how do you justify giving massive tax cuts to wealthy Americans, millionaires, billionaires, big corporations, while taking away health care from the poor and, as I said before, middle class, who cannot afford nursing home care when they get to be in that position? So I don't know what this means. You're going to be taking your parents in and quitting your job to take care of mom and dad when they get old, or the food that's not great in nursing homes is going to be even less great if you have disabled children. And the opioid crisis, the Medicaid cuts, you know, 35 to 50% of opioid treatment around the country is through Medicaid. We have people dying every day, massive cuts in Medicaid. So it's pretty damn mean, and it's not clear. You know, we talked about the House bill as being mean. The President, Trump, even said it was mean, that the moderates in the Senate were going to come up with a kinder, gentler a piece of legislation. They didn't.
You mean the 13 white men who gathered in a room where they wouldn't tell anybody where it was or how they were doing it or weigh in on the process?
They're not going to fund Planned Parenthood for years, speaking of white men, so that will effectively prevent poor women from accessing birth control and cancer screenings at Planned Parenthood, which is the largest provider of those services. They do not, as we've said a million times, get any, not a dime of federal money for abortions. They get federal money for birth control and cancer screenings and basic pap tests and that sort of thing.
Well, of course, one of those men, Senator Mike Lee of Utah, had already spoken out earlier in the week saying that he wasn't happy with the bill. As we've talked about, only two they can only lose two votes before this just goes down in flames. And there are a number of senators weighing in on the GOP side, ranging from the more liberal side of the GOP to the ultra-conservative who have problems with this. And I think it'll get more definitive, I think, on Monday, right, when the Congressional Budget Office is going to release their – of course, they're a nonpartisan organization.
Yeah.
They'll release their report when they looked at the House bill. They found that 23 million fewer Americans were going to be insured, and there are a lot of comparisons to the House bill here. So,
yeah, we're going to have quite a few millions who have insurance now are going to be uninsured. We may have to hope for the girls in this one. Susan Collins from Maine, Lisa Murkowski from Alaska, Shelley Caputo from West Virginia. Maybe the girls will stick together on this one and be enough votes not to get this through. Speaking of girls, we had our own Senator Elizabeth Warren posting this video on Twitter criticizing the health care bill. Here she is.
This is a really terrible bill. And make no mistake, this bill is about tax breaks for the rich. And this bill is about Republicans saying, hey, those are our priorities. We're taking care of the people we care about, and everyone else can just bear the costs of it.
Yeah, it is hard to say that this is a good bill, even if you are a huge Trump supporter and even if you are, I mean, the Rand Pauls, they have a philosophical opposition. They don't want to have any the
right,
federal government
right.
involved in people's insurance. But, you know, we keep forgetting, I think, that before Obamacare, the major cause of bankruptcy in the United States of America was medical bills for people who had insurance. And this Senate bill will go back to that same sort of deal where they're going to put a lot of ability of people to buy these kind of health insurance plans that don't cover much of anything. So you have health insurance, but as the headline in the New York Times today says, get your cancer now while you still have your insurance, because it may not cover things like maternity care, like mental health care, like emergency services, like some hospitalization. So you'll have insurance that won't cover what your sickness is when you get sick. So I don't know. It's a real disaster. There is some hopefulness if you are opposed to this, which I certainly am, is that Mitch McConnell basically just wants to say we got this out, and even if it fails in the vote, he can say, okay, we tried, we failed, now we're going to move on to tax reform. I mean, that's a possibility that he may give up. But I don't know. He may get the votes. We didn't think this would get through the House. It did. Many people are hoping it won't get through the Senate, but it could.
It could, and which, of course, just to remind people, they want to do that before the 4th of July recess, which is just about a week and away at this point. And we just heard from Senator Elizabeth Warren. Former President Barack Obama has already spoken out about this, too. Not taking the tack of many former presidents, not commenting on policy, but he's, in short, he says this bill will do you harm. He talks about the massive transfer of wealth from the middle class and poor families to the richest people in America in terms of subsidies, how premiums are going to be higher for people paying insurance themselves, and about the millions of families, again, as the Congressional Budget Office found last time, who likely will find themselves without insurance.
Yeah, well, you know what cracks me up? All these people that are so religious talking about they're praying for everybody and they're in church every week and they're going to their Bible study. I think it's tough to kind of square all these big evangelical Christians with slashing all this help for the poor. But anyway, I will stop proselytizing. Oh, before we do get to the phones, we'll just listen to Rand Paul. We spoke about him, how he's a physical philosophical opposition to this kind of government involvement. He's much more of a libertarian. Rand Paul of Kentucky, he spoke to reporters about why he and Ted Cruz and Mike Lee and Ron Johnson, everybody loves Ted Cruz, as we know, are opposed to the Republican health care bill.
Myself and three other senators are releasing a statement as we speak, and this statement will say that we cannot support the current bill. We're open to negotiation, but we want the bill to look more like a repeal. We're afraid that when we read the bill, that it actually looks like a reiteration or a keeping of Obamacare. We think that the idea that we're going to allow the death spiral of Obamacare to continue, but we're going to subsidize it, is just not a very Republican notion.
Of course, he is right. It is keeping of Obamacare, but it's taking away the money to fund it. And it's also taking away the mandate. So as Mitt Romney used to call them, the free riders, people are not going to have to get insurance. And as I've said a million times, and everybody has said, if you don't have healthy people buying insurance, you cannot afford to take care of sick people. So they're taking away that mandate, which means essentially that even people with private insurance will have the same kind of skyrocketing increases in their premiums. Premiums have continued to go up, but they have gone up less under Obamacare for people that are privately insured. So anyway, there's the picture. Is there anything to be done? The American Medical Association doesn't like this. The American Hospital Association doesn't like this. Will they stage some blowback, or is this just the way it's going to be, and we should all look out for mom and dad in the nursing home and maybe build a little extra room off the back of the house for them to come in and live when they hit 80 and 90. 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. Let's go to Heidi in, I think it's Hudson?
Sutton.
Or Sutton.
See, I think we both need to have our eyes checked before.
Yeah,
while
I know.
While we can still do that.
Yeah, Sutton.
It's hard to see in these computers, yeah, but Heidi.
Hi. I think it's just awful. Thanks for taking my call. I have 2 points to make. One, I think that it deserves a subtitle. It needs to be subtitled The Modest Proposal. I assume y'all are familiar with that.
Yeah, it's a very modest proposal. You're talking about the Jonathan Swift thing about why don't we just eat the poor people?
That's right.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
If listeners haven't read that, it's satirical, but it's very fitting for what the GOP is trying to do.
Yeah.
So.
It just is, I don't know, it just is, it's disheartening, I guess, and it's disheartening particularly because I'm not sure what people can do to stop it, because there's going to be negotiations, the pot will be sweetened. I'm sure that there'll be certain senators that will get more money in their particular states for perhaps opioid coverage or something like that. They'll sweeten the pot, and it's very possible they're going to get the votes that they need. But, Heidi, that's a great line. Eat the poor.
The second point that I wanted to make quickly is that I don't understand why it's necessary to eviscerate Medicaid. Medicaid existed pre-Obamacare.
Right.
And it's, if you're eviscerating Medicaid as a money saver, why are you then giving a huge tax cut to the 1% with the other hand? You know, why not keep those taxes from the people who don't need them and fund Medicaid?
Well, I hate to be cynical, Heidi, but I think that what this is really about is getting rid of Obamacare, every vestige of it, and that includes taking away the tax cuts for Obamacare, because Obamacare raised taxes on the wealthy to pay for it, so we must take away those taxes because we have to kind of wipe them out.
Right, we are talking about the Senate's health care bill, asking you if you feel powerless to stop legislation that will leave millions uninsured and penalize the old and the poor. Is this what it means to make America great again? The conversation continues on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
This is Boston Public Radio on WGBH. Made possible thanks to listener contributions. Your support of just $5 or $10 a month keeps Jim and Marjorie and the Great Conversations coming your way. Please take a moment to give now at WGBHnews.org or call 888-897-9424.
Okay, we got the best gift of all today, the legendary Boston Public Radio obsessed tote bag. I have one, Jim has one, and of course this is an honor of Jim.
I do not have one.
Well, you should get one because, you know, Jim is obsessed with many things. I sort of am too, but I think he's got me beat. And anyway, it's a great tote bag. I mean, what's National Public Radio without a wonderful tote bag? And this is our tote bag day. How do you get it? Give $12.50 a month as a sustainer, and we will thank you with that wonderful Boston Public Radio obsessed tote bag. By the way, you can throw it in the washing machine. You can dry it in the dryer. It works really well. The number is 888-897-9424 or WGBHnews.org. I want to point out this is your last chance to get this special obsessed tote bag because it's not going to be available after 2 p.m. today. It's kind of an honor of the show here that's on from 11 to 2. So please show that you're a fan of Boston Public Radio, and you can carry this around and give us a big free yeah, with your groceries and other favorite possessions. Because when people see the word obsessed in BPR, they'll know exactly what you're talking about. 888-897-9424 or WGBHnews.org.
You can hold lots of groceries in that tote bag. I'm looking at it right now. It's a beautiful tote bag. Remember, you can always give as a sustaining member, which is our monthly giving plan. It's easy to give monthly gifts that keep the programs you love, including Boston Public Radio, on the air month after month, year after year, hopefully. It's an easy way to give. Just pick any amount to charge each month on your credit card, even $5 or $10 a month. That's all it takes to give. You can do so by going to calling 1-888-897-9424 or go online to WGBHnews.org.
Now, the pressure's on for me and Jared today because Jim always maintains that there's no one who can raise money for the station like Jim Browdy, you know.
And so
I'm going to be compared to him, and you and I are going to be compared to him, Jim. So, Jared. So those of you who email and text, like I said yesterday, to say that Jim talks a lot and he interrupts me all the time, this is an opportunity to show that we can raise as much money without Jim as we can with Jim. 888-897-9424 or WGBHnews.org is the website. And I want to thank very much Jay from Brookline, Michelle from Barrington, Rhode Island, Leonard from New Salem, and Susan from Punta Gorda, Florida.
And I want to thank Marguerite from New Bedford, John from Waltham, Colin from Randolph. Again, just call at 1-888-897-9424 or give online at WGBHnews.org.
If you're just tuning in, we are talking about the Senate's health care bill, taking our calls and your calls and our questions about everything having to do with it. Are you a Republican who's been waiting 7 years for this moment? If you are, what do you like? That's what I want to know. What do you like about this bill? Or are you horrified by what this bill could do to millions of people? 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. And I'll repeat again, Medicaid has always been an entitlement, meaning that, you know, people for nursing homes or for disabled or for births or for whatever it is, the states rack up the money, the federal government reimburses this. What they're trying to do now is dump this back on the states. So what is going to happen is the states are not going to be able to afford this, and there's going to be less coverage and fewer people covered. And the eligibility is lowered. You're going to be even poorer than you were under the House bill to qualify for Medicaid. So it's really kind of a scary situation, and it's particularly bad for older Americans. The AARP, I wonder where they are on this. They should be screaming and yelling about this.
Oh, I'm sure we'll hear from them in a minute. Atul Gawande, he's collaborated with a few doctors who've just written this piece that talks about one of the things that Medicaid expansion has done is led to increased testing for diabetes, cholesterol, HIV, all preventative measures, which ultimately brings costs down in the long run. That, they're concerned, a lot of it goes away under the Senate bill.
And from a humanitarian thing, if you don't have those preventative care options covered in your insurance, what happens is you're really sick before you go for help, and you may not get better. It's really kind of, I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm biased on this. I think this is awful. Marie from Salem, what do you think?
Hi. I was just, I think that what the Democrats are, what they never do is they never play kind of in Republican wheelhouse. And if the Republicans are all about defense, military. Well, if we're raising groups of children, you know, who don't get medication, who aren't going to doctors regularly, it's going to be a generation after generation of these thinly, sickly little kids. How are we going to send those soldiers into battle? Isn't it a defense issue, really, to have a military made up of strong, healthy, you know, rah-rah American kids who are going to go and, you know, get into battles and war and stuff. But we need to play into this Republican idea. I mean, they're pouring money into the military. Well, it's not going to do any good to have these big, huge fighting machines if we don't have people who are strong enough, tall enough, whatever.
Yeah, no, I got it. Marie, that's a interesting point, because a lot of the people that do join the volunteer military are not from the wealthiest enclaves of the country. Thank you very much for the call. Grant in Littleton, hi.
Hi, Marjorie. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. I'm going to come at this from a bit of a different angle. One of the first things you cited in your facts this morning was a national poll that says this bill is very unpopular.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, I've become very leery of national polls ever since the presidential election. I believe that Hillary Clinton got 3 million more votes than Donald Trump
right.
in the popular election. So
right.
I'd like to know a state-by-state breakdown where the senators are influenced more than I would a national poll of maybe 30, 40% people who are approving of this. I want to know how people feel in West Virginia. I don't want to know how people feel in Massachusetts and New York or California, because I think that those numbers are frankly skewed. And I'm very much of a Democrat, but I want some realistic numbers. I want to know exactly where we should be, as Democrats, be targeting our money to try to defeat this bill.
Yeah, well, you know, I know everybody hates the national polls, but the national polls on the election were close to what they turned out to be, a 2 to 3 point difference. It was just on the other side. It was Donald Trump that won and not Hillary Clinton. The state polls were really off in those three states, and that's why there was so much, she really blew it, obviously, not going to those states, but it may not have mattered one way or the other. But, you know, I don't know what the individual state polls are. I'm sure there's going to be state polls. But what's interesting, Grant, is that, you know, a lot of back when the Obamacare was first passed and no one could imagine that individual states, especially poor states like Mississippi, would not accept money from the federal government to expand Medicaid so that millions more of the people in those states could get coverage. Governors in those states, they were so opposed to Obama that they didn't take the money. And so they're, it was like free money coming from the federal government. Well, not free, because ultimately taxpayers pay for it, but it wasn't their state money. So, I was amazed. What did people in Mississippi think of their local leaders, that they would reject that money, not allow these millions of people to get Medicaid? That's why I got John Kasich, a Republican who ran for president. You may recall he's from Ohio, a huge state, and he is very much in favor of keeping the Medicaid expansion because it enabled millions of people to get coverage, and it also helped the opioid epidemic. And by the way, Mike Pence, the vice president, when they had that terrible opioid epidemic and AIDS epidemic in his state, you know what he rushed to do? Use Medicaid to get all those people covered so they could get coverage. But in the state polls, I don't know. You'd have to look. They may be out there. Of course, it was just proposed yesterday. Oh, my goodness. We are out of time so fast with the break, aren't we?
It's a fast Friday.
I'm sorry we didn't get to any more calls, but we are moving on because it's pledge and we got to go.
All right. Coming up, how could the Boston Globe's move to downtown Boston be a headache for the state's transportation secretary? Shirley Leung explains. She's next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
It's time to support Boston Public Radio on WGBH. Listener contributions pay for the program and keep it on the air. You don't have to give much to make a difference. Please make a difference by calling 888-897-9424 or give online at wgbhnews.org.
All right, we're in the midst of our pledge drive right now, and we're talking about the big incentive today is the Obsessed tote bag, which you can only get until 2 o'clock today when we go away at the end of the show today. So does the Obsessed tote bag, and you can get that by supporting WGBH and Boston Public Radio. Just call it 888-897-9424 or give at WGBHnews.org. And all you have to do is just give as a sustainer just $12.50 per month as a sustainer or a gift of $150 all at once to get the glorious, which I don't have, but Jim and Marjorie both have. If you see them walking around town,
I know, it's great.
Toting their groceries, they have the Obsessed tote bag.
It's great. It's great. And I think it's a bigger one than the one we had before. Isn't it a little bit bigger, Jack Callahan? I think so. Right. You can really get quite a bit of groceries in there and all your books and your computer and all that kind of stuff. It's a terrific tote bag. Very stylish, if I do say so myself. And easily cleaned. I put a little shout on the spots, you know, to get the stains out. Just throw it right in the washing machine. So, you know, the reason you have to listen to us begging for money all the time is because we don't have any commercials on on National Public Radio, and that is a wonderful thing because you do not have to sit and listen to commercials that go on for 5, 6, and 7 minutes every, like, 15 minutes on the air. You know what I'm talking about. If you listen to commercial radio, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Not that you should be listening to commercial radio, of course. So if you can give a little bit of money, if things are not really going well for you now, and you can throw us $5, that would be awesome. If things are going well for you and you can throw us a lot more money, we'd really appreciate that. And it also means that you're kind of contributing to what you like to listen to 24/7, 7 days a week. It's Boston Public Radio, but we have all these great reports all day long here at the station, and we have great stuff all weekend long, the New Yorker Radio Hour. We have a new BPR on Sundays from noon to 1. So if you like that stuff, please take a minute to contribute. The number is 888-897-9424, wgbhnews.org. I want to thank David, a very, very generous gift. And thank you very much, David. We much appreciate that. From South Glastonbury, Connecticut, Patricia from Worcester. A anonymous friend in Mashpee, she said she loves the show. Thank you very much, anonymous friend in Mashpee.
And of course, as we talked about, one of the ways you can give is to be a sustaining member. It's a way that you don't have to give everything all at once. It's just a monthly gift that you sign up for. Just pick an amount to sign up for with your credit card. Even $5 or $10 a month is all it takes. Just go to 1-888-897-9424 or go online at wgbhnews.org. We thank you for your support.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy is back off today, back on Monday. Jared Bowen is filling in. If you're just tuning in, we are joined right now by the Boston Globe's Shirley Leung, the business columnist. We are, by the way, I should point this out again, we are broadcasting live from the gorgeous WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library. So poor Shirley, she had to drive 15 minutes to work. Now she's 45 minutes on the MBTA to get to the Globe's brand new headquarters. Shirley Leung is joining us as a WGBH contributor. Shirley, great to have you here. And very funny column that you wrote today. Oh, are you plugged in? Are you okay? Can we hear Shirley?
So. Can you hear me?
I think we can hear Shirley.
Can hear
but
you
we're
now.
Good.
Okay.
Our
here it is. Here it is.
You're all set.
All right, great.
Okay. So you had a great point in your column today that now that 90% of the Globe reporters are going to have to take the T to their downtown offices, otherwise they won't be able to afford to park. They're going to be watching every move the MBTA makes.
Yeah, well, we have a couple hundred journalists now taking the tea.
Whoa.
As I call it, Transportation Secretary Stephanie Pollack's worst nightmare. Every breakdown will be tweeted. We will have lots. We will lodge complaints. I mean, we are. And as I wrote in this morning's column, we have a. I guess we're bracing for a bad experience, given that what happens. I mean, of course, a few of us already were right. I mean, there were people. There were probably a good number already riding the T, but now it's most of us we riding the T now because there's very little affordable
parking.
You're
on State Street, right?
Or State Street, yeah.
And that'd be $40 a day to park, wouldn't it?
Yes, it would be. And anyway, usually our experience with the T is through. Headlines, the runaway, your favorite,
train.
The runaway red line train.
That was the best.
the fire and the smoke in the orange line and how the harrowing escape where commuters had to kick out the windows.
I'm partial to the snakes on the train, but that's not really the T's fault.
The snakes on the train was the great thing. And the legendary squeak if you're on the Green Line coming into Boylston Street Station. You have to put your fingers in your ear. I mean, that noise, that squeaky noise. You say, why don't they just get out the WD-40? But apparently that doesn't work because I've asked the T that for years.
But Secretary Pollack was a good sport because I said, I'm going to be now a daily T writer. Do you have any advice? And how do you feel about this? And she actually welcomed it. She's like, bring it on. She felt that the T, we haven't completely fixed the T, but it's a lot better. It's a lot better.
Well, I was struck by your column. Where you say you didn't necessarily encounter the problems you thought you might encounter right. In your first days of commuting.
A lot of people complain about a lot of people complain to at MBTA on Twitter. Actually, I said, what do I do if I have a problem? She's like, tweet it. That's the best way to communicate with us because they have three people around the clock who just monitor Twitter. And I went and I... you know, I was like, is this person really real? You know, are these people real? So they invited me to the command center yesterday. So I walked over from our new office to the command center on High Street. And sure enough, there's a woman named Gregory Flanagan who was there with her tweet deck monitoring all the,
and it's actually,
you now understand why Twitter is actually useful for an organization like the T. It's like a two-way communication. They can see the complaints. She sits next, Gregory sits next to a supervisor who can then just, figure out what's going on, if there's a problem, and so they can communicate back and forth. And so she doesn't respond to every complaint, but probably, she looks at a lot of them and tries to address issues. If there's no air conditioning in a particular car, I mean, she gave great advice on how to, you know, tweet a complaint. She's like, get the car number on the subway, look at the front or the back, we'll have the car number. She says, tell me, you know, remember to say the line, right, tweet the line, and which direction, and what stop you're at. And you can see that they've trained the T-writers when you look through their Twitter feed that that's what people have been doing. So, but anyways, the T's really focus, under Pollack and over Baker administration, they've really focused on improving core service, not expanding the line, not buying. I mean, they are getting new cars, but really just really boring things like track improvements, the third rail, things like that. And she's like, it's made a difference.
It's kind of like fixing your roof, you know. Right. Who wants to fix their roof? You don't see it, but you
exactly.
know, it costs you a fortune,
exactly.
but you kind of have to do it.
Right.
That's what it reminds me of a little bit. But I wish they could just make the Green Line faster.
The Green Line's got old cars.
Got old cars, and it stops too much. You know, let people walk four blocks. Is it the end of the world? I mean, there's like 19,000 stops on the Boston College Line. You ever notice that?
Yeah, there are a lot.
We'd all be thinner if we could.
They don't want to walk because they're like Shirley DeYoung in her high heels, she was counseled
against.
So
that was the number one tip. I walked in her office, and Stephanie Pollack just shook her head looking at my shoes. Like, you need to wear comfortable shoes. And she showed me in her office, in her corner of her office, she has a pile of comfortable black flats, and she's like, that's what you need. And so my first day, actually, I didn't even wear flats. I wore sneakers just to be on the safe side.
Channeling Melanie Griffith and Working Girl.
Well, you know, I have to say, I also had emailed Governor Dukakis, probably the most famous T writer of them all, and he also said his number one tip was comfortable shoes as well. So, because you never know if you're in between stops, and you know, and so you might need to walk quite a bit, even though you're taking public transport.
Yeah.
You might be doing quite a bit of walking.
Well, great column, Shirley, of course, as always.
All right, so Shirley, there's a lot of discussion in Massachusetts right now about the so-called millionaires tax. The legislature has passed this legislation which would tax millionaires, anybody with an income of over $1 million, with basically a 4% surcharge, I guess is the best way to describe it. And one of the criticisms right away was, fine, you can do that, but millionaires are going to flee the state.
Right.
How is this going to break down, do you think?
So I guess the legislature just approved it to go on the ballot in 2018, and of course there will probably be some legal fight now challenging whether it can go on the whether it's legal to change the Constitution in order to raise taxes on and also to earmark it for education and transportation. And it's really this battle is really heating up. My colleague Michael Levinson wrote about, he interviewed millionaires, and some of them were very concerned, including, I think, is it Roger Marino? He's the M in EMC.
Yes.
And so he's
yes.
concerned about, he's even thinking about leaving, and so it gives him pause. But the studies say that they don't flee.
Well, it's interesting, and thank you for pointing out, I think I misspoke, it's not a legislation that's been passed, it is a ballot question, but it was pointed out that a lot of these millionaires already have homes in other states, so it's easy to shift residency.
Right. They could also, right now, they could just move to New Hampshire, and they're not. They're choosing to stay. I mean, if they really wanted to save taxes right now, they could, right? No income tax in New Hampshire. They can just go there. But I think it'll be a real fight. There was this week, Jeff Jacoby, another columnist, wrote about it, and he said you would never do this. He thought this tax was incredibly unfair.
Yeah, well, when you can't really peg it, as he said, to education. You can't peg it to certain things in transportation, but they may find a way around that.
Yeah.
They may actually be pegging it to health care if the new health care bill passes.
All right, we're talking with the Boston Globe columnist Shirley LeYoung. She's not going anywhere. The conversation continues on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Hi, it's Jim Browdy. I'll be back on Monday with the Boston Public Radio Obsessed Tote Bag. Will not be. That's right. Today is your last chance to choose this truly iconic, life-changing, planet-saving canvas tote bag as your thank you gift when you support Boston Public Radio on WGBH. You have until 2 p.m. After that, this tote bag will be totes gone. So get yours now when you give online at WGBHnews.org or call 888-897-9424. And thanks.
And this is also your last chance to prove it, that Jared and I can do it without Jim here supervising everything. He's not here. We're hoping to meet his match in terms of raising some money here for Boston Public Radio and WGBH and all the fine work that goes on here. So the Obsessed Tote Bag is a really fun, neat thing. But think about this. If you listen to us, if you listen to Bob C. in the morning, if you listen to Barbara Howard in the afternoon, you listen to the programming on at night, you are getting all this for free with no commercials. So it really matters that you support us, because you don't support us, you know, there won't be all these shows. I mean, it's the bottom line. We need the money to keep going here. So we're hoping that you could be generous. I remember when I was young and broke, I used to even throw a couple of bucks toward NPR. It was really only a couple of bucks, like $2, no, $4 or something.
But that's all that matters.
Those are my young, struggling reporter days. But the thing is, I planned my life around certain shows that I wanted to hear. I would drive around those certain shows. So it means a lot. We're kind of like a club, but we need to kind of support each other. So think about that. Get the Obsessed Tote Bag. But most important, prove that we can do it without Jim. 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org.
Yes, as we're broadcasting from the Boston Public Library, as we're right near the Boston Marathon finish line, Marjorie and I want to finish first in
That's
this
right.
race and raise
do.
More money than That's Jim can possibly raise.
Exactly. That should be our theme.
Maybe I get to hold on to the scepter just a couple more days if that happens. Just call 1-888-897-9424. Go online to WGBHnews.org. This is also the time to start become a member. It's become part of our family here. If you haven't already, just $5 a month is all it takes to become a new member. We want to thank supporters like Isabel in Providence, Rhode Island, and Dorothy in Franklin. Call 1-888-897-9424 or go online, WGBHnews.org.
You know what else? It'll make you feel good. It'll make you feel like a patriotic American, a generous American, somebody opening up their wallet for a good cause. You know what I mean? When you do those good things, you always feel really good about it. So it's not just for us. It's for
You it's for
too.
You.
Exactly.
It's about your own self-worth.
Exactly. Exactly. Now, we want to thank people who've already donated. Janice from Cheshire, Connecticut, thank you so much. Roseanne from Hudson. Lori from Shrewsbury. It means a lot to us. Being a sustainer member is really the best way to go, because it's a little bit out of your wallet every month. $5, $20, $50 if you can swing that sort of thing, and allows our budgeters to budget. So we only have till 2 o'clock with this really cool Obsessed tote bag. 888-897-9424 is the number. Online, give securely, WGBHnews.org. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. We are broadcasting live from the Boston Public Library, and we are talking with Boston Globe business columnist Shirley LeYoung. So, Shirley, you know, we used to talk a lot in Deval Patrick's administration about life sciences, and he was a huge supporter of life sciences. And Charlie Baker, heretofore, was a little bit, I guess his line was, he didn't want to pick losers and winners in the business, but something's changed.
Yeah, I think to a lot of people's surprise, this week, ahead of the big bio convention in San Diego, he decided to make a formal announcement that he is going to extend Deval Patrick's signature economic initiative. You know, it was $1 billion over 10 years to fuel life sciences here in Massachusetts. He's going to do $500 million for 5 years. So on an annual basis, he matched it, which is, I think he had signaled in March that he was going to do something, but I think the number pleasantly surprised a lot of people.
Why is this so important, this industry?
Well, this is the I think he, as I wrote in my column, I felt that Charlie Baker really didn't have a choice. He had to extend this. I mean, this was clearly a winning strategy. I mean, yes, we had these ingredients here. We had teaching hospitals. We have research talent. We have VCs. We had some biotech companies. But I think the billion-dollar initiative that Patrick launched 10 years ago really helped pull it all together. I mean, and make us one of the, you know, perhaps the global. I mean, people think of us as the global leader in biotech.
Yeah.
And you know, many of the top drug firms are here now.
We're at 18 of the 20 top
and,
in your
and,
column.
Yeah, are here now, and I think it's in large result because the idea that this is a place where government and private sector support the life sciences. This is the place to be, and so it's really important for ultimately for our economy and for our branding. I mean, you ask GE why they moved here, and they will say because of life in large part because of life sciences, because they have a big healthcare division here, and so. This is really one of the pillars of the innovation economy. I think I wrote that if Charlie Baker didn't renew this contract, it'd be like Bob Kraft not renewing Tom Brady's contract.
That was a great line.
I mean, it's really a no-brainer. And so I think it was exciting for him. For a lot of people in the industry that he did do this. He's going to make it a little bit different. Patrick's program was more infrastructure related, so it built labs at UMass Amherst, it built a research facility at UMass Medical in Worcester. This one will be focused a bit more on job training and career development of the workforce, which I think is exactly the right move, because when you talk to companies, their biggest complaint is there's not enough talent in the pipeline. The kids graduating today don't have the right skills, or they can't find the workers with the right skills. So that's it's a great place to really take this very successful program and make it his own.
And is this something that's spread out across Massachusetts? It's not completely concentrated here in Boston, right?
And
it seems like Worcester is benefiting from
right.
this.
Right, and I was going to say, think about Charlie Baker. He is part of his economic development initiative is to create jobs outside of greater Boston. And so I think he will really, and even when the GE deal was brought here, some of the economic incentives thrown in, the Baker administration wanted to make sure a lot of the jobs, a lot of the training happened outside of Boston as well. And so I think you'll see the Baker administration make a concerted effort to make sure they can train people outside of, try to get, you know, people outside of Boston trained. Maybe they work here in greater Boston, but they come from other parts of the state. It's not just, you know, the graduates of MIT or Harvard that will benefit from some of these government programs.
We're talking to Shirley Leung. She's the Boston Globe's business columnist. So it's been sort of a wild week for Travis Kalanick, the guy that runs Uber, or used to run Uber. I guess he's hanging on the board. But just explain a little bit about how his removal as the chief guy happened. It's fascinating.
It is. So last week, I think he was just taking a leave of absence.
Yes.
And this week he actually resigned, or I don't know if he, I guess fired, resigned. but what's really interesting about what happened to him is that usually Silicon Valley investors, I mean, he's quite a visionary entrepreneur, and usually the board and the investors just let the visionary do whatever they want.
Right.
And in this case, the investors are really worried about the future of the company. So some of the top investors came in. I think there was like a meeting in Chicago,
yeah,
right, in a hotel
dragged him
room.
Into a hotel room.
Spent the entire
it's
day.
Like an intervention.
Intervention, and so like you know, refused. You know, it was like I'm not quitting. But by the end of the day, he did quit. I mean, basically, I think they got some top investors from Silicon Valley, also Fidelity Investments, to kind of go in and be like, it's time for you to step aside. Basically, we need a grown-up CEO now.
You know,
thank you for your service. You've brought it this far. Now we need to, you know, get a CEO with clearly better values.
But you know, you write wonderfully about women in the workplace and the issues that women face and stuff. I thought it was wonderful that this a lot of this started with this woman. I mean, I know the drivers were complaining about the, you know, minimum wage and bad services.
Yeah, the female
engineer.
Yes.
Yeah, tell people who don't know about her.
So she was, I think, worked a year at Uber, and she was one of the very few women, female engineers, and she felt harassed. She reported to HR. They ignored her. And then I think in February she wrote this really long blog post that got the world's attention, and really you could mark that as the beginning of the end of,
but it's so courageous, you know.
Yes.
because she will always, in any kind of future position she's in, she's going to be known as the woman who was the whistleblower at Uber. Mm-hmm. And that can cut both ways. People may think you're wonderful, people say, I don't want a troublemaker like that working
right
for me. So her courage is really something. I think it's something to be applauded, needless to say.
It is, and it's amazing that it's really, I mean, it's really her blog post that started the Delete Uber campaign as well. A lot of women socially, I mean, they cater to millennials who are very socially minded, and so I think it's really had an impact on Uber.
Well, on that point, I can't get a read because Uber has gotten so big, so fast, all over the world. We've seen all of these horrible headlines that have come out recently, especially around their now ousted CEO. But how much do you see this as a brand problem, an image problem for Uber, or is it skating past? I really can't tell if people are that upset about it.
It is a big brand problem. I think if you look at the its market share, I mean, it dominates the ride-sharing market, but it has fallen, and Lyft has managed to increase its market share in Boston and in around the country. So it is having an effect. And I think that's why the investors move fast, because they started to see that, if at this rate, they could lose significant market share. I mean, the thing is, right now they have 75% of the market share. It's a gigantic lead, but I think in Boston alone, I think it was Lyft had 14% of the market share in January. Today it's more like 24%. So if they kept that pace, you're not going to have that big of a lead anymore. Uber also introduced, I think they're testing tipping.
They're going to test tipping. We're going to have it here at the end of July. By the way, I looked at that woman's name because I should have given her credit. Susan Fowler.
Yeah.
Righetti, R-I-G-E-T-T-I, is the engineer that posted that blog post. But I think it's going to come here at the end of July. It's being tested in three other cities.
Yeah.
And that's great, too, because you can just put the tip on the app. Because how many people don't even bring cash out anymore?
Right. I thought it was really interesting because that story broke the day, right? I forgot which day, but that story broke first, the Uber tipping. And then the next day was Uber CEO being ousted, It was like, we'll give you the good news and then slip in the bad news.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad because I feel less guilty now about taking Uber.
or we could just do the new app. We talked about
that
the other day.
You can put the Lyft app on here.
I know, but it took me about 2 hours to figure out how to do the Uber thing. I don't know if I'm up to doing the Lyft thing.
Marjorie and I, we need to hold each other's hands to do that.
Let's wait till the kids come home, so they can help me out.
All right, Shirley Leung joins us every week. She's the business columnist for the Boston Globe and a WGBH contributor. Always great to speak with you. Up next, Emily Rooney is here for her famous list of proclamations and preoccupations. She's next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
Every day on Boston Public Radio, Jim and Marjorie spend time getting to know their neighbors, too. It's just that sometimes their neighbors are, the governor or Doris Kearns Goodwin. And it's such a good feeling to know that you've helped make it possible. Pitch in by calling 888-897-9424 or do your part online at wgbhnews.org.
And we are funded by listeners. We are funded by listeners, and we are here during the summer membership drive to ask for your contribution to WGBH. You can give online at wgbhnews.org or by giving a call to 888-897-9424. I'm Maeve Buckley, and I'm joined by Mark Cohen.
And when you support WGBH by giving $12.50 a month, we'll say thank you with the Obsessed Tote Bag. If you're a fan of Boston Public Radio, and we know you are, this is your only chance to get the Obsessed Tote Bag. It will not be available really anymore after 2 p.m. today. So time is running out. If you really want this tote bag, it's a doozy, and it can be yours at $12.50 a month as a sustainer. Give us a call at 888-897-9424, or you can check it out and make your contribution securely online at WGBHnews.org.
And it's going so well this morning, but we have just 8 contributions left to go and just about 6 minutes left to get there. Please join with other WGBH listeners and help pay for your Boston Public Radio listening. WGBHnews.org is the website to go to make your contribution, or you can do so by calling 888-897-9424.
WGBH receives a very small amount of federal funding, and it's really not nearly enough to pay for the amount of listening that you do, but that's okay. It's why we're listener-supported public radio, not government-supported radio. Thanks to the support of our members, we don't have to depend on federal funding to keep the news on the air, but it really only works with your show of support. So if you've already made that contribution, thank you so much. And if you haven't yet, please take just a couple of minutes of your time right now and go to the phone at 888-897-9424, or take those same couple of minutes and go to our secure website, WGBHnews.org.
And remember, support WGBH today by giving $12.50 per month, and we will say thank you with the Obsessed tote bag. If you are a fan of Boston Public Radio, this is your only chance to get this Obsessed tote bag in this drive. In fact, it will not be available after 2 p.m. today. The tote bag features Obsessed in big, bold quotes on the side, and it is the perfect size for the farmer's market, hauling around your favorite possessions or your obsessions. So show that you are a fan of Boston Public Radio and your favorite hosts, Jim and Marjorie, by signing up as a sustaining member. It's just $12.50 per month. You can also make a one-time gift of $150. Again, that deadline is coming up soon. It's coming up at 2 p.m. this afternoon. After that, the Obsessed tote bag will not be available. Call 888-897-9424 or make your gift securely online at WGBHnews.org.
Less than 4 minutes ago, before 12 o'clock, and we're counting down our goal. 6 more contributions left in just about 3.5 minutes to get there. So please join with other WGBH listeners and help to pay for your Boston Public Radio listening. WGBHnews.org is one way to go, or give us a call, 888-897-9424.
Today, we're asking you to help keep NPR and WGBH on the radio. When you give money to WGBH, you will help pay for the news you trust and count on. You also make a powerful statement about the importance of having a public radio station in our community. So make your call right now. Make your gift of support, 888-897-9424. You can also do so online at WGBHnews.org.
And just a reminder that when you support WGBH by giving $12.50 a month, we will thank you with the soon-to-be retired Obsessed tote bag. This will become a collector's item before you know it. If you already have one, you know how sturdy it is, how much stuff it holds, and how absolutely cool it is to have the big Obsessed on your tote bag. Be one of those members. Show your pride for Boston Public Radio and pledge your support at $12.50 a month as a sustainer or a one-time contribution of $150. You'll get this Boston Public Radio Obsessed tote bag. It can be yours, but you got to make that first step by going to the phone, 888-897-9424, or securely online at WGBHnews.org.
I want to say a few thank yous. Thank you to Mary in Jamaica Plain. Thank you so much to Linda in Worcester. And thank you to Mike in Haverhill, who says, why would you not want to sustain Boston Public Radio? It sustains me in this post-election world. Thank you so much for all of your support. Won't you be the next person to call in? Giving takes just 2 minutes of your time. We just need your name and contact information, which we keep private. You can become a monthly sustaining member using Visa, MasterCard, Discover, or American Express, or you can make a one-time contribution. Please give now before the day slips away. Call 888-897-9424 or give online at WGBHnews.org.
Just about a minute and a half to go this hour looking for six more contributors. Scratch that. Make that four more contributions to go before we hit 12 o'clock. So please call us at 888-897-9424. Help to pay for the programming that you depend on. Again, we are counting down four more contributions with just about a minute left to go. 888-897-9424 or online at WGBHnews.org.
And I want to remind you again, we have this wonderful way of saying thank you today. When you make a gift of support of $12.50 per month or a one-time contribution of $150, we will send along the Obsessed tote bag. If you are a fan of Boston Public Radio, this is your only chance to get the Obsessed tote bag. It will not be available after 2 p.m. today. Again, that deadline coming up at 2, so call 888-897-9424. A gift of $150 or $12.50 a month is all it takes to do your part. 888-897-9424 or WGBHnews.org.
Coming up on Boston Public Radio, from the Department of Irony, less than a week after a judge declared Bill Cosby's sexual assault case in mistrial, the actor-comedian is gearing up to get back to work by holding a series of town hall meetings to help educate young men and women about sexual violence, specifically the threat of being accused of inappropriate behavior. Then Emily Rooney joins us for that, plus her famous list of fixations and fulminations.
I'm Jared Bone, and for Jim Browdy, the award-winning writer Sherman Alexie had a complicated relationship with his mother. She was abusive, she was a drinker, and affection did not come easy to her. As Alexie puts it, his mother was dead salmon cold. His life with her and without her is the stuff of his latest book, a memoir entitled You Don't Have to Say You Love Me. From there, it's our Friday news quiz. What happens when two pledge masters face off over the week's news? Find out next on Boston Public Radio.
Back to Boston Public Radio. I am Marjorie Egan. Jim Browdy's out today. He's back on Monday, executive editor of the arts at WGBH. Jared Bowen is filling in for Jim. Fantastic job you're doing here, Jared.
Isn't it an artful yes. job, Marjorie?
Yes, but in honor of Jim's not being here, we just went over and bought the Jim sandwich for lunch.
We did. We're in solidarity about that.
That's right. So we are broadcasting, I think I just said that, but if I didn't, I'll say it again, at the WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library. And we are speaking, as we do every Friday, to Emily Rooney. She is here for her famous list of fixations and preoccupations. Host of Beat the Press, thank you very much.
This is fun,
Emily.
Coming down here every Friday because I'm
fun?
Right in my neighborhood. The problem is I have to go back and forth to Brighton, but you know.
You know what? You should broadcast your show every week.
Well, we're going to start doing that. Oh, by the way, we're going to start doing Beat the Press, not this week, but in 2 weeks, we're going to be here every Friday for the summer. Summer in the city.
Fantastic. I mean, is not this the greatest place to be broadcasting from?
It's
absolutely
gorgeous.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So, you know, this I read this story and I just about fell off the chair.
Which one?
It's unbelievable.
This is Bill Cosby.
Oh, yeah.
Who narrowly avoided getting a conviction on sex assault. 60 women have accused him of sexual assault. And now what's he going to do, Emily Rooney?
He's going to go around the country and have town halls on how to avoid being falsely accused of sexual assault.
Yeah.
Telling young people what to do to avoid being falsely accused.
His publicist said that, you know, these days, a brush against the shoulder can wind up getting you in
court.
Well,
that's true. There's a...
I don't think so.
Actually,
I
know
so.
Somebody who grabbed the shoulder of a woman in a cafeteria line and wished her a happy birthday, and he was brought up on sexual assault
And what
charges.
Happened?
It doesn't matter. He was still charged with
it. Yeah, yeah.
But it's gone overboard. It's gone
okay.
overboard.
Well, do you think Bill Cosby?
No,
is
but that's completely different.
Overblown case.
No, but we say that it's the bar has lowered. That's for sure. That's for sure. You can't do anything. You can't say nice dress. You can't.
Oh, Emily.
No. You can't.
Okay, well, going back to Bill Cosby.
Yeah, I'm right about that.
I think you're right about that. It is extremely hard to prevail in a sexual harassment suit. Extremely hard. The numbers are very small for people prevailing. Like, it's just like a rape case.
I don't know.
It is. It's just like a rape case. It's just like a sexual assault case. But we're not talking about that. We're not talking about the brushing against the shoulder. We're talking with someone giving you quaaludes, knocking you out, and then sexually assaulting you while you're incapacitated to fight him off.
I mean, you kind of believe at this point he's just completely lost his sensibilities.
But you know people like that. They have a whole team.
Delusional.
But they have a whole team around
it. He doesn't think that he ever did anything wrong, and he thinks whatever he did was perfectly okay because all these women wanted to have that experience with him. He honestly believes that.
Including his wife, we might presume.
Yeah.
Since she...
Well, she didn't think he did anything, but now he's admitted at least he had relationships with other women. He had to admit it with that woman, Patricia Constance. What was her name? Patricia Constance.
Yeah.
Constant. Patricia Constant.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you think that there's a retrial? Does she do any better in the...
I think they will definitely retry him. Mm-hmm. By the way, the jurors are speaking out today.
Oh, I haven't heard what they said. What have they said?
Apparently it was incredibly contentious. And that, you know, some people were going for a conviction. Others were, you know, more on the fence. And it was, there was two lines of communications. And now they're even putting out conflicting reports about what was going on in the jury room. So you can imagine the level of discord over that trial.
Were these jurors aware of the other 59 women who'd also accused him?
I believe they were aware of some of them. I don't know if they had the full extent, because the only reason, as you recall, that that one went to trial was because that was the only one that was still within the statute of limitations, and others had already passed that. But since he had already given a deposition in another trial, they knew that this accusation had come up before because that deposition was entered into evidence at this trial.
You know what's
trial.
Amazing to me about these cases? Okay, in his case, he has 60 accusers, including this one that just went to trial, but they knew about the other accusers. So it's always fascinating to me. Okay, 15 people say Emily Rooney robbed the 7-Eleven. And then when the 16th person comes in and says Emily Rooney robbed the 7-Eleven, they believe that Emily Rooney had robbed the 7-Eleven, but somehow in these kinds of sexual assault cases, you know, 16 people, 25 people, 40 people like Roger Ailes, what was it, more than a dozen with Bill O'Reilly, and in this case, 60. And somehow they
believe... I think people believe it. I think that the jury was saying that the case was not adequately proven, then, and that Patricia Constand was not a good witness. And I won't actually go along with that.
Yeah,
because
Andrea Constand.
Andrea. She called him 53 times after the assault, and she waited 2 years, was it, Jared, to actually report the assault. She wasn't a good witness. Why did she call him 53 times? They, oh, well, it was business for Temple University. Well, that stretches credulity a tiny bit. She was the basketball coach, and he was on the board or something, but did you have to call him? You couldn't have called somebody else, you know. So I think that made the case thinner.
Okay. They had to be perfect victims, which is really hard to find. Yeah. Same thing with Anita Hill.
That was crazy.
Yeah. Well, I think I know why women do it, because they're their bosses and they're powerful, and they can help them in their career or hurt them in their career.
True.
And they can squash them like a bug. Yeah. So you try. That's
absolutely true.
Yeah. So
which is why she went along with it until got nominated as a Supreme Court Justice. And she says, no, I'm going to speak up about this. And there's no way she could have made up the detail. I mean, we're off the Cosby thing, but it's the same thing. You can't make up that kind of detail, especially in the Cosby case, where the repetition of it was exactly the same. Every scenario was exactly the same, with the quaaludes and some kind of drug, Special K it might even been, which paralyzes you.
Decade after decade. But the interesting thing here is they're doing this minimum 5-city tour, Chicago, Detroit, Philadelphia, maybe Alabama, so that they know. And what I was trying to say earlier is that it's not simply Bill Cosby deciding he's doing this. He's got a whole team around him who think that this is the appropriate thing to do.
It's a rehab tour.
And more significantly, think that there's an audience for it.
There probably will be. It's a rehab tour before he goes on trial again. Right. Oh, there will be a huge audience for it. I mean, curiosity seekers, if nothing else. Be interesting to see if there'll be major protests, as we've seen at some of these college campuses events, you know, when conservative speakers show up and that kind of thing, whether they'll accept Bill Cosby because he's been charged with these things.
So Emily Rooney from Beat the Press, Nancy Pelosi has told the people in the Democratic Party and others who don't like her, quote, "I think I'm worth the trouble," unquote. There was a lot of talk last week when she was cited, the ads in this John Ossoff, Karen Handel race in Georgia, focused on John Ossoff being, you know, lockstep with Nancy Pelosi. She's very, very unpopular. Is this ageism, sexism?
Definitely.
San Franciscoism?
it's a combination of everything. You know, she's such a liberal icon in a way, and has been that for decades now. And she's 77, and she dresses perfectly in these gorgeous Armani suits with the high heels.
I
saw her tottering around one of the conventions a few years ago, and I thought, my goodness, how does she do that? You know, she's got an entourage with perfectly coiffed on these high heels, walking around, I think it was San Francisco, you know, all dressed up like that. But, it, you know, if it were a 77-year-old guy who'd have that seat for all this time, and are they blaming her for John Ossoff? This was a media-driven story, that John Ossoff thing. But somehow this one guy that was in a Republican stronghold was going to turn around the House, you know, makeup if they want. It's almost never going to win. It was almost
but here's the question.
Never
okay.
possibility.
You
of
could
it.
Agree it's sexism. You could agree it's ageism. You could agree it's the liberal icon thing and that she's not particularly good on television. But as one of the women in Congress, as Representative Kathleen Rice from New York says, it's none of this is fair. But the Democrats are having a tough
yeah,
time
she
winning.
Should
so
probably,
maybe she should step aside for the good of the
should.
Party.
She probably should. Who would go in? I mean, you know, it's not that. Who would it be? Who are
Seth
they
Dalton.
Floating? Yeah, there you go.
Right. Why not? But I want you to finish that thought. You had tried to, what if it was a 77-year-old guy? Do you think this
well,
wouldn't be happening?
Well, they might at this point, but, you know, I mean, even with what happened with John McCain a few weeks ago when he was testifying, when he was asking those questions of James Comey, I mean, he sounded like a doddering fool, but
yeah.
I didn't see a lot of people calling for his resignation, and he's 77 or 78.
Yeah, I think he's 80. I think he's 80. I think a lot of those people are quite old. Mitch McConnell's quite old. Mm-hmm. Orrin Hatch is quite old. But they have a different...
Let's not talk about age.
Okay. Well, none of us are spring chickens except for Jared over here. He's a spring chicken. But I think that the difference is the Democrats have a different kind of leadership structure, so their leadership is very aged as opposed to the Republicans. Mm-hmm. Paul Ryan, I think, is 48.
Yeah, true.
So it's a different kind of deal.
I give her a lot of credit for even... She basically, they were saying she's a lot of trouble. She may not be worth it. She says, "I'm worth the trouble." Those six words are very powerful. I sort of like the way she put it.
She's tough.
Well,
when
you dive down into it and you see all of the stuff that she's able to do behind the scenes, mm-hmm. the backroom negotiations, all of the money she's raised, mm-hmm. literally, she's worth it.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Emily, we only have 2 minutes before the pledge break. But we don't want to get you a list. That's after the break, but we want to know what you think about this Charles Manson.
No. Okay, I want to. Yeah, so this Patricia Krenwinkel is one of the Charles Manson women. She's been in jail for 47 years. She was one of the ones stabbed Abigail Folger, who was the Folger coffee heir, you know, 47 times. She stabbed a couple of the other people. She stabbed Rosemary and Leon Bianca the next night. She's definitely a murderer. She was definitely also under the control of Charlie Manson. I think 47 years is enough. I understand why the families of these people, but, you know, she's already given her life in a federal penitentiary.
Well, she's lucky to have a life because she was given the death penalty at the outset.
Then the death penalty was removed from California. But I'm not soft on crime. But I just don't... I think 50 years is enough. And a lot of things change. Your maturity changes. I mean, your entire life in jail. I would give her parole.
It's also, what are you achieving at that point? I
Nothing.
Mean, she's not going to go
paid
out and murder anybody.
She has paid for the crime.
Late 60s or 70s.
I'm obsessed by this case, Jared. You weren't even born in 1968. I can remember reading, I was on my way to New York City, reading about that case. I couldn't get enough of it and watching it on TV. And then when the books came out and the TV movies, I just, how could this possibly exist? This is before we really knew that much about cults and, you know, mind control and all that. And definitely, she was only 19 years old.
Yeah.
And he's basically kidnapped her.
Yeah, and there was a sort of a battered women kind of defense that
which
she tried to
work.
Use, which
yeah.
did not work. But I don't know enough about it, but she may have a point. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, Emily Rooney is here. We're going over the latest news. Up next, if you pledge enough money in this next pledge break, she'll deliver her world-famous list next. That's up
Maybe
to
not.
You. Just call 888-897-9424. You're listening to Boston Public Radio live from our WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library.
Hey, it's Jim Browdy, and thanks to Boston Public Radio's loyal battalion of listeners, it's safe to say that we've got this pledge drive in the bag. And speaking of in the bag, today is your last chance to pick up the official Boston Public Radio Obsessed tote bag. That's right. It's going away at 2 p.m., so do not miss out. Call or give online now. It's 888-897-9424 or online at WGBHnews.org.
Okay, the tote bag is pretty neat. It's sort of an official mascot, I suppose, or not mascot. That's not the right word. What is it? What do we call it? It's just a typical... That's right. Well, that's a logo, but it's kind of a thing. You with tote bags. You just associate them with National Public Radio, right? It's like a standard gift. And this is a really cool one. It says Obsessed on the side, Boston Public Radio, WGBH on the other side. It's really great. Carries a lot of stuff, and it's only available to 2 o'clock today. This is your last chance to get the special Obsessed tote bag. And you, like I said, you can throw it in the washing machine, carry your groceries, carry your computers, carry your books, whatever you're doing. Maybe you're having a fun weekend away like Jared is. I'm doing nothing. Anyway, you can get it for $12.50 per month as a sustainer, or if you want to give money all at once, $150, but it's only available to 2 o'clock today. If you can do it, it would be wonderful. We want to thank Priscilla, who became obsessed real fast, from Maynard. Thank you very much, Priscilla. Cynthia from Wellesley, Mary Beth from North Kingston, Rhode Island. The number is 888-897-9424, or give online at wgbhnews.org.
This is also your chance to become a new member of WGBH and support all of our programming. And because I'm here, I'd like to talk about the arts programming that we are able to do that you don't find in a lot of other places around New England, but that I love doing and really can only do with your support. $5 per month is all it takes to become a new member. Call 1-888-897-9424 or go to wgbhnews.org. We want to thank Evan and Jane from East Falmouth. And then, I love this, David and his daughter Eliora from Framingham are giving, they're starting with $10, and they have listed it as $5.01 for Marjorie and just $4.99 for Jim. He has been discounted.
That's right. That's absolutely wonderful. 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org. I don't mean to sound really sappy, but it is sort of like, you know, throwing in a few bucks for something that gives you a lot of news and information 24/7, 7 days a week. Is it not, Jared?
Well, Emily and I have been here at GBH for a very long time. We've seen the ups and we've seen the downs, and we have actually felt how much the support matters, the financial support for public media over the years.
And we all like our jobs very much, and we would all like to keep our jobs very much. So we need public support to help us out. A very small amount of our budget comes from the federal government. I think there's a big misconception about it. It's a very small amount. So again, 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org. And thank you for whatever you can give, if it's a little, if it's a lot. We just appreciate your taking the time to donate. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Because it is Friday, we are broadcasting live from our WGBH studio at the corner of Boylston and Exeter Street in the Back Bay. And here with us, as she is every Friday, is Emily Rooney, host of Beat the Press. And here's the moment that everyone waits for, craves all week long, can't get enough of. Here she is for her famous list.
Incomprehensible.
It's out of control.
How about common sense?
Doesn't matter.
Why not?
This is the kind of thing that drives people crazy.
It's your right.
Doesn't matter. I have absolutely no interest.
As I always say, this catapults me to my, 20 years with you, Emily, and my sort of, oh my God, terror again from when she was my boss.
Oh, Jerry, come on.
Oh.
Your whole career to me.
Wait a minute.
What?
Was she a good boss, Jared?
Oh, she was a tough boss. She was a very tough boss. But I always say, Emily, she's one of my best friends now, but she is the mother who raised me journalistically. Just about everything I know in journalism, I learned from the journalism blue blood that is Emily Rooney.
Yes. She is a journalism blue blood.
Jared is a fine writer, an excellent reporter, very organized.
All thanks to you.
Bingo.
There you go.
No, he had the genes anyway.
So, really, do you have the news business in your genes? I did not.
No.
He had the writing gene.
Oh, he had the writing gene. Okay. Yeah. All right, Emily. Is this thematic?
It is. It's a little strange, too. Of course, as Jim would say, most of my lists are a little strange. Or I'm often out there. You're out on a limb.
We love them.
All right. So, my list today, and you can jump in and agree or disagree or add a few yourselves, is if I could change anything.
Okay.
About, you know, the word. And a lot of this sort of scientifically oriented, but if I could change anything, I would move the winter and summer solstice by 1 month. I would move it to July 21st. I mean, we're already on the downside.
Right. You are so right.
This doesn't work.
We were just talking about this.
And I would move Christmas to January 25th anyway. I mean,
why that?
Oh, you know, no one really knows when Christ was born anyway. It's just
You do have a chance of more snow to have a white Christmas in
January.
Yeah,
there you go.
So I might be on board.
It would all
with
work out better.
Well, you have more time to get organized. I mean, Thanksgiving here, and suddenly you're in like a total panic.
Yeah, I would just move the whole thing.
But we were talking about the summer solstice the other day and saying how awful it is that the days are getting darker earlier now. And you're right. July 21st would be perfect.
Although I have to say, really, this week and next, It only changes by, it starts going by 2 minutes a day, but right now it's just seconds, so you won't really notice it for another couple of weeks.
But by the end of August, it's really dark early.
Right. Speaking with my scientific things that I would change if I could. I'm big into geoengineering, and I just don't understand why this hasn't happened yet. But I would control rain, you know, when it rains, where it rains. I would control climate control, everything. You know, so you move the clouds over when it needs.
What?
Know,
yes. How do you do that?
It's going to happen. Not in our lifetime. It's going to happen.
Wait, why would you want to do that?
Well, like what's going on in certain, there's great famine in certain countries.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, you know, weddings, you got to move it.
You do. I mean, think of the stress.
And if you pay 15% extra, we can move the clouds for you.
Exactly. Yeah. See? Exactly. I'll be the scientist in charge of that. So what day is the wedding?
Wait a minute.
I'll make sure.
Could they? Is this something that's in the pipeline?
I think geoengineering is on the horizon, but not there yet.
Because of the wildfires in California?
Like, we're going to be able to pump ocean water into space. That's how we're going to get rid of the rising tide. We are. Think about it.
They had that great story about...
I don't know anything about
it?
This.
Where was the story that Scandinavian country the other day that had all the canals, like Venice, to deal with their water problems?
Yeah, I don't know.
It was a great story. We're going to have to
do water is the number one problem in the world.
Yeah, this is
so
the
number
one
problem
in the
world. So we need to be able to get a handle on that.
I love
all
that.
Right.
Okay.
You like that one?
Yeah,
okay.
2-0.
I know. So this one is a little bit... But if I could change anything, I would make women as physically strong as men.
Oh, I'm
I find
there.
That really annoying.
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
Oh my God, the upper body strength thing is really annoying.
Yeah.
And you get reliant on people to help you. And it's like, I mean, I'm strong and I'm fit, but I can't carry 80 pounds down the street.
No, it's true. And it's, you know, you think of the sports that women can beat men at, they're kind of few and far between.
No. I know, like Jim had that swimmer on the other day who's transgender, came to Harvard as a female swimmer. And then became transgender, and now is a male swimmer, very mediocre male swimmer because he doesn't have the muscle mass.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing you can really do about that.
Yeah,
even with hormones. You know,
I know, and women are really great in the marathon, but they're still not anywhere close to the men. It's kind of upsetting.
Okay, so I would also, if I could, change the aging process to a point. I mean, I don't mind getting older. I don't mind looking older, but...
You don't? I do. It drives me crazy.
It just comes a point where it gets really, really bad, you know, when you're really old. And it's just like, I wish there was a way to just sort of gradually fade that instead of this suddenly you're just this... Don't look at me that way. Jared's looking at me like, yeah, you're there, hon.
No, I was just scrutinizing your face. Has it happened?
No. Let's hope we have a few more years before we're totally decrepit.
Well, I mean,
but it's
the aging process has changed a little bit already, even by the way people take care of themselves, feed themselves, exercise more. But if you look, people who sort of are of different generations or even class issues, you know, it's like, you know, cultural issues. Some people get older much faster. So if there was
you
a way to...
You have to keel over, Emily. That's the way to go. You have to hope for that. I
want to
just go boom, right down.
Right before it happens,
You know, like a snap your fingers. She was here, now she's gone.
All right, now this is really, really far-fetched.
What?
Not that the others haven't been. But I wish there was a way to figure out how to see things that have already happened. Like, all right, let's bring back that night that O.J. Simpson stabbed... You know what I mean? Just bring it back. I mean, it happened. It's out there. Everything exists that already happened, you know? Why can't we see it?
I was just having this conversation, having just been in Dallas and seeing the Kennedy stuff. I thought, this is my fantasy. When I die, I get to go to the bureau, and I get to have all of my questions answered. Like, did my sister really ruin all my toys that day? Did Lee
wonderful.
Harvey Oswald really kill John F. Kennedy?
Yeah.
I have a whole slew of questions.
I do, too.
That's a list for you.
I have a whole list of things I'd like to ask. I can get into that.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I'm with you on that one.
That's a good one.
All right, finally.
She's 4-0.
This one is 4...
Or 5-0.
Oh, how about this one? I would make food not fattening. Why does food have to be fattening? Why can't it just be nourishment?
Yeah, like a great
cheeseburger. I want to be able to eat more.
Well, that would be boring, though.
No? I want to eat more.
Yeah, you want to be able to have all the bad stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, who doesn't love a really greasy, juicy cheeseburger?
Yeah.
Loaded up
with the fries.
Extra cheese and fries.
Yeah.
I dip my fries in mayonnaise.
Me too.
Wow. I love that.
But who doesn't love to do that? And then just go for a nice 20-mile run afterward. Yeah, who doesn't love that, Marjorie and Emily?
Exactly.
So,
plenty of exercise.
So that was an excellent list. One more. Okay, here we go.
This one's actually very easy. And I know you're going to love this one, Jared.
Okay.
I'd bring back the mounted police tomorrow.
Yep.
Absolutely.
I'd love them.
Yeah, they had that stable out there, and you got by the cemetery in Roslindale. I think it's on Morton Street.
Loved having them.
Where are those horses? They're gone. Did they send them to New York City or something?
Factory.
No, that did not happen.
No, they sent them to New York. But I used to love to go through the public garden, and you'd see the guys and the gals on the horses. That was pretty cool.
They're so regal, and kids
love
them. One
of them bit my finger once. It was my fault.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, you can't just shove your hand in front of a horse's mouth.
Yeah.
Especially when it's holding a carrot or something.
He thought your finger was a carrot, no doubt. So what's on Beat the Press tonight?
Oh, okay, so Beat the Press. So we're doing this home arrest with the White House press corps. I mean, Jen Acosta at CNN is saying, all right, we've got to stop covering this. They're shutting it down. They're not allowed cameras to roll. So Steve Bannon tweeted out today that the reason Sean Spicer won't let cameras in is because he's gotten too fat. I mean, this is just craziness. So,
does Jim Acosta not look like George Clooney's younger brother?
Handsome. I know.
He's very handsome.
Marjorie is
Well, people should check him out. Jim Acosta,
talk about
CNN.
Preoccupations.
Well,
and
and then we've got the Wall Street Journal's chief foreign affairs reporter. Not even believe this. Got into a deal with a notorious, I'm calling it a gun runner, but he was an arms salesman to foreign countries, including the CIA. He was into him for 10% of his business, and he was covering him, and he was a source. He got fired. It's like, wow. Hmm. So that's
wow.
And we got a lovely story on the Globe Move, which I shot with Shirley Young the other day. She's got another piece on Monday. I've got a piece for tonight that's on the new digs and everything.
Yeah, you know, I was saying to Shirley, when I used to work at the Boston Herald, we used to have this great old falling apart building in the South End with this huge presses inside, and then we moved to a nice spiffy building down at the Seaport. I miss that old falling apart building every single day. But you said the Globe looks beautiful.
Yeah, I don't know how much they're going to miss the old building.
Yeah.
I know.
I mean,
well,
we
some of them are.
You traps have to under our desk.
Stand by for some of the curmudgeons I have in my piece tonight.
Really?
They're resisting the move.
Yeah. I like the blood next to the water fountain where somebody died. They didn't clean it up, you know, for years.
Oh, boy.
We like that sort of thing at the Boston Herald.
Of course. Tabloid girl that you are.
Exactly.
All right, Emily Rooney joins us every Friday. Of course, you can keep up with her right here on WGBH2 for Beat the Press, Friday nights at 7 o'clock. Up next, Callie Crossley is here to review the news that flew under the radar. She's next on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Hi, it's Jim Browdy. I'll be back on Monday with the Boston Public Radio Obsessed Tote Bag. Will not be. That's right. Today is your last chance to choose this truly iconic, life-changing, planet-saving canvas tote bag as your thank you gift when you support Boston Public Radio and WGBH. You have until 2 p.m. After that, this tote bag will be totes gone. So get yours now when you give online at WGBHnews.org or call 888-897-9424. And thanks.
All right, as Jim just mentioned, that is the gift of the hour, the Obsessed Tote Bag, which you can get by giving just $12.50 a month. We'll thank you with this Obsessed Tote Bag, which has the WGBH and Boston Public Radio logos. It's perfect for toting around groceries. It's perfect, especially you don't need much clothing this time of year, so it's a perfect weekend away bag just for some flip-flops and a bathing suit.
That's right.
Gorgeous, perfect size. So
flip-flops and a bathing suit.
Just call 888-897-9424 or go to WGBHnews.org. And again, all you have to do is give $12.50 a month. That makes you a sustainer. Or you can just make it easy and give a gift of $150 all at one time. And the bag is only available as long as we are today. And that is until 2 o'clock when Boston Public Radio comes to an end for the day.
Actually, we don't ask for money very often. We ask for money only a few times a year. And in exchange for these few pledge breaks that we do during the year, you get commercial-free radio. You hear the news. You hear programs like this. You hear Bob C. in the morning. You hear Barbara Howard in the afternoon. You hear all the weekend. I mentioned before, we have a great new weekend, Boston Public Radio, noontime on Sundays with Andrew Cabral, who's a frequent guest of ours here. So you get all this without any commercial interruptions. None of those. I mean, how bad is it? Now it so annoys you watching television when you don't have the clicker that you can fly through the commercial.
Last time you even saw a commercial.
I hate commercials. I think all of us do. So that's the trade-off. that you do have commercial-free radio. So we want to thank the people that have given to us today. It really does mean a lot. Anastasia from Des Moines, Iowa. She says she's no longer in Boston, but she's still loyal thanks to streaming. Thank you very much, Anastasia. Joyce from West Roxbury. Pam from Weston. Oh, I think they're voting on me and Jim today. Oh, they're voting. Oh, my God, I didn't pitch myself. Vote for me, please. Vote for me, please. Pam voted for me. We're in a contest. I'm not sure what the contest is about, but we're in a contest. Anyway, 888-897-9424 is the number, wgbhnews.org, if you want to give online.
We also want to thank Katie from Cambridge and Louise from Grafton, right next to where I grew up in Upton, Massachusetts. We thank you for your support. Remember, this you just have a little bit of time left to get the Obsessed tote bag. Call 1-888-897-9424 or go to wgbhnews.org. Just give $12.50 a month or give $150, that's monthly, or $150 all at once to get that fantastic tote bag.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. It is Friday. We are broadcasting live from our WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library. And rushing over to join us right now, she's been ignoring us, but
somebody's
here she is.
Somebody's a little tardy.
Is the host of Under the Radar, Callie Crossley. Thank you very much, Callie. I thought maybe you were boycotting. You were sitting
over
there.
No, I thought you all had more to say before I came over.
No, we had nothing else to say. Thank you very much for coming down here today, Callie. Okay. As always, Callie's with us every single Solitary Friday. So let's start with a little bit of national news about the president. Mm. Many people remember there was a meeting right after he became president with the Black Caucus in the Oval Office. That was the famous photograph where Kellyanne Conway had her feet up on the couch, and that caused a big uproar. She didn't have her shoes on, though, but she had her feet up on the couch. Apparently, there's a new development in the relationship between the Congressional Black Caucus and the president. What's that about, Callie?
Well, first of all, I think the meeting that Kellyanne Conway had her feet up on the couch was with the HBCU presidents.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yes. So, but yet there was another photo op with the Congressional Black Caucus members when they later met with him. You may know, or others may know, that Omarosa Manigault, who once appeared on Trump's Celebrity Apprentice, is now the White House outreach person to, you know, all people who are persons of color. And she carries an honorable title, apparently, because she signs her letters the Honorable Manigault. But I digress. Anyway, they met with President, the whole Congressional Black Caucus met with President Trump. This is, again, after he asked April Ryan if she knew them and could set up the meeting, if you recall from that.
Okay,
all right. So just so everybody has that context. And they met, and they brought a very detailed plan. They said, you asked the question on the campaign trail, what do we have to lose? Here's what's happening in each of our, with our constituencies in each of our districts, and, you know, with a great amount of specificity. Here's some things that we could talk about and work on, blah, blah, blah. Well, nobody expected in the first meeting that, you know, everything would happen. No. You know, that was just a just get to know you kind of thing. And he promised there would be follow-up meetings, not only with him, but with other members of the department that were very specific to these concerns. And then, you know, then we'll work together. Well, she sent a letter around saying, okay, why don't you come back? Let's have another conversation. And Cedric Richmond, who is the president of the Congressional Black Caucus, said, no, thank you, because we've been writing letters since then about some of our specific needs, as highlighted in that meeting, to the various departments and getting no response. And we're quite concerned about some of the policies that have been put in place that are a direct hit to people that we represent. And, you know, they outlined that with a great amount of specificity, as I said. And said, so we are not interested in having another photo op and where there is really no discussion, because we're all sitting, the 43 of us are all sitting around a table. Let's get to work. Let's move in some specific way. She just appeared on Fox last night saying she was very disappointed.
That Omarosa?
Yes, Omarosa.
What's her deal?
What do you mean?
Well, I just mean, you know, I only watched The Apprentice after he became the president, because I missed it during the whole time, and I know she was a star on the show and stuff. But, I mean, is she a genuine person, or what do you think of her, is basically what I'm asking you.
I think she's a not very good sellout. If you're going to be one, be efficient at your job. And I don't think she is. That is my assessment.
So she's a half-baked sellout.
Yeah, that's what I would say.
Or maybe a quarter-baked.
Right. Okay. Like, be on your game. If you're going to accept the role and take the money, then be on your game. I don't think she is.
Okay.
Okay.
In what sense?
in any sense, you know, if your job is to outreach, then you should have been the ones when they're sending letters and trying to meet with other members of the department. Remember, this was your little idea. Let's all get together. Let's talk. So, and we're going to have follow up. All right. Well, we're trying to follow up. Nothing. What are you doing? She doesn't respond when other hard questions come up. You know, it's just my thing is if you're going to be in the position and take the money and say that you are, then do something.
Okay.
Or else make it clear that you're not and then just don't respond at all.
All right. We took care of her. So move on.
Okay. Yes.
All right, okay. Kelly Crossley. So we know who the president wants in his cabinet because of who he's assembled. But what type of person does the president not want in his cabinet?
He doesn't want any poor people. He likes rich people. And he's made that clear at a recent rally just a couple days ago in Iowa. Very ironic, actually, because he was in Iowa when he first complained bitterly and talked with a great amount of rancor about Hillary Clinton and the Democrats for having what he said were strong ties to Wall Street. So now he's back in Iowa, having won the presidency, and touting his very close ties to people who have extremely strong ties to Wall Street. And in addition to that, have been made quite wealthy because of it. And he said the reason he doesn't want poor people is because, nothing against them. He likes them, but nothing against them. But working for him in the cabinet means that these rich people really have nothing to gain. He pointed out that, in fact, when you take a government salary coming from where Steven Mnuchin, who is the U.S. Secretary, or the commerce guy, who is Wilbur Ross, they make, you know, millions and millions, billions of dollars, and they come in to take peanuts, then that, according to him, makes them more pure in their intent to help the American people, and therefore it's great to have really rich people. He did ask the crowd, if you're unhappy with this and you'd like me to get rid of the rich people, just give me a high sign. And they said they didn't seem to be bothered by that, at least the crowds there at the rally where he was speaking in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. This was Wednesday evening. So there you have it. Don't come to him if you don't have a lot of pocket change and more.
We're talking to Kelly Crossley, the host of Under the Radar with Kelly Crossley. So this is a I did not know that B. Smith prematurely diagnosed with Alzheimer's, early onset Alzheimer's, but her husband is launching this petition involving Aunt Jemima wanting the brand to change its name. I hadn't kept up with the Aunt Jemima stuff, but tell us what's going on.
Well, some people may know, because, you know, there's a lot of cultural history that just has not been passed on, and some people just now see the syrup with the black lady's face on it, and they may perhaps not know the history. But actually, Aunt Jemima is a very much a fixture, the name, the whole thing. It comes from slavery, right?
Yeah.
When older black women were referred to as aunts, the older black men were referred to as uncles, and they were, you know, often not related to anybody. This is by people who had enslaved them. All right, so, and of course, they were cooks in the kitchen. So originally, when these people put together the company that made the Aunt Jemima pancake mix, they decided, this would be great to sort of embody cooking and good cooking and, you know, familiarity. So let's put this black woman's face, the stereotype of this black woman with the bandana around her head. It was really pretty gruesome. For several years, that was the image, and then there were many protests. And finally, and I'm trying to remember, PepsiCo, I guess, owns it now, but it was owned in between by, I think, Quaker. And they changed the image. So they modernized her, so she just looks like a, if you don't know any better, she just looks like a black woman on the bottle. But as Dan Gasby, he's the husband of B. Smith, who is a black woman entrepreneur and restaurateur, says, but everybody knows where this comes from. I thought his quote in this story is really pretty interesting, because he says, if you don't think that this that the image still relates to what it was meant to relate to when it was first put in place, he said, I challenge you to just ask any black woman, do you want to live up to the standards of Aunt Jemima?
Yeah.
And see what you get. You know, I hope one day to live up to, I hope my daughter lives up to the standards of Aunt Jemima. I don't think you'll be getting the response. People know, you know, what that means. So he's been trying for many years. This isn't his first attempt to get rid of that as an image, and now to get PepsiCo, which owns the product, to move it. and they haven't been interested. He started a newchange.org petition, and he started it on Monday, which was Juneteenth. So here's another little bit of history if people do not know. Juneteenth refers to June 19th, 1865, which was 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was declared by President Lincoln, but the enslaved people in Texas did not get the word until 2 years later. It was announced on June 19th, hey, you know, these people, you're free. And so he wanted to make a statement about freeing the image of the pancake syrup, freeing Aunt Jemima on Juneteenth, and also the very serious, you know, to attack really the underpinnings of what this means in our racial history. And he's hopeful on the good side of this, if people would become more interested in it, and I think he's getting more attention now that it's change.org, to have his wife then become a representative. She's a very successful restaurateur, a lifestyle expert, beautiful woman, former model, and is well known and highly thought of, and unfortunately has become a victim of early Alzheimer's.
She's pretty young, isn't she?
Yeah, she's very young.
Was she in her 50s?
This is early onset Alzheimer's.
Early 60s, is it?
I believe so,
Oh,
yeah.
My gosh.
Just a plug for the Alzheimer's Association. They do a lot of work in this area about early onset and, of course, the other stages of Alzheimer's. So it is really something that it seems particularly heartbreaking for somebody young.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We're going to be back with Callie Crossley after we take a brief break.
Yes, as Marjorie mentioned, we're talking with Callie Crossley, broadcasting live from our WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library. And if you want to keep hearing from Callie Crossley, if you appreciate Under the Radar with Callie Crossley, if you like that we're broadcasting out of this gorgeous come one, come all civic space, the Boston Public Library, stay tuned. We're going to tell you how to do your part. This is 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
It's time to support Boston Public Radio on WGBH. Listener contributions pay for the program and keep it on the air. You don't have to give much to make a difference. Please make a difference by calling 888-897-9424 or give online at wgbhnews.org.
Okay, we only have an hour and 15 minutes more for this tote bag, and it is a really cool tote bag. It is a standard National Public Radio tote bag. I shouldn't say standard because it's very different. It's got Obsessed on one side, Boston Public Radio on the same side. On the other side, it says WGBH. And the idea is, of course, we hope that everybody's obsessed with WGBH and that you tune in all the time. So you can get that for $12.50 a month, which is really not that much money when you think about it. What is that, like 3 large lattes at or maybe like a dozen Dunkin'
Not
Donuts.
Not even, I think.
Yeah, I think a dozen Dunkin' Donuts. How much are they now? Like 12 bucks for a dozen? Well, anyway, it's not very much money, and that really means a lot to us because it can help the people that do the budgets plan, and it's a small amount out of your wallet as opposed to taking a big hit. So it's only going to be here until 2 o'clock. We really hope that you can take the time to donate and get yourself one of those sturdy, washable, dryable, BPR logo and Obsessed in big, bold quotes tote bag. And it means a lot to us, as I said before, that people take the time to donate. We love that people listen. It really means a lot if people can listen and throw us a few bucks along the way. We want to thank the people that already have. Jeannie in Auburn, Laura in Cambridge, Claudia in North Attleboro. Thank you very much. It means a lot to us. Our number is 888-897-9424, or you can give securely online at wgbhnews.org.
We also want to thank Christine from Waltham, who says the Jim and Marjorie show is a huge part of her day. She also says the guests and the co-hosts, I think that's me, are amazing. So we thank Christine.
That's Jared. A shout-out for Jared.
How immodest of me via Christine. Thank you. As we've been talking about, you can also do a sustaining membership, which is very, very easy, and that is our monthly giving plan. It just keeps the programs that you love on the air, the personalities, the viewpoints that you love on the air. Just pick an amount, any amount to charge each month to your credit card. Even $5, $10 a month is all it takes. All of it makes a difference, no matter what the amount. Call 1-888-897-9424 or go to wgbhnews.org.
You know, I'm a big procrastinator. You only have an hour and 15 minutes to get this Obsessed tote bag. You'll be really sorry if you don't do it when you see people walking around with these very chic and snazzy and posh and swish tote bags and you don't have one.
Anyway, after 2 o'clock, it's vintage.
After 2 o'clock, that's it. So please take the time. Don't procrastinate. Call the number right now, 888-897-9424. You can give securely online at wgbhnews.org. And we really do appreciate a little bit if you can give or a lot if you can give. That's great too. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jared Bowen is in for Jim Browdy. Jim, by the way, will be back on Monday. We are broadcasting live from our WGBH studio here at the library, and Callie Crossey is with us going over some stories that may have, we're not going to talk about under the radar until a couple of minutes. We're not under the radar next because we've got something that, people may not have heard of this story, but this is a pretty neat story about these prison inmates in Georgia. You know, I saw this picture and I thought, this is like the full deal. People can't, of course, see the picture, but these guys are in, what do you call their outfits?
Stripes.
Stripes. They're like in total stripes, like a chain
detail.
Gang
chain
or
gang.
Something.
It's like right out of Cool Hand Luke.
It is right out of Cool Hand Luke.
Or Brother, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, Brother, we're out there.
Thank you.
Yes.
Arts editor. I knew you would know.
Executive arts editor.
Thank you, executive.
To you, Kelly
Crossley. That's right. All right. Okay. I knew you'd know.
Yeah, but tell us the story. This is a great one.
Well, I came across this and I thought, is this a made-up story? And then I looked at it and I thought, my goodness. So there was a group of inmates, the one that you reference in the picture, who are out on a work detail in Georgia, well remote from the prison. So there's six of them working. They have one guard, and they're working away, and it's hot. It's really hot, as you know, we can imagine there. And the guy passes out, the guard, face down in the heat. And so the six inmates, you know, this is their opportunity. They can leave now. He's the only guard. And there's six of them, so they run over. They know that it's part of this is heat-related, so they take off his bulletproof vest, which is adding to the heat, so they get some air. They start CPR. They try to get attention. The guy's got a gun on him. You know, they could have taken the gun. They could have run. There's no chains on their legs that I can see, so they could have done that. They were in for minor criminal offenses, so there's no murderers in the group, in case people are wondering. Anyway, the help came, and everybody says, had they not done what they'd done, the guy would have died.
Yeah.
So the family afterwards of the guard fixed lunch for them and said thank you, and more importantly for their lives, all of their sentences have been reduced by 25%.
There's a great quote from one of the inmates who said, in my opinion, it wasn't about who's in jail and who wasn't. It was about a man going down, and we had to help him.
Yeah.
So you're right. They could have.
And none of them hesitated. Nobody said, "Wait, leave him. Let's go." So that's, you know, in a time when there's hardly any good news, that's kind of a nice story.
Yeah.
I have to say.
It's a great story. I think it's a really great story. Yeah.
Not so great story. Cafe Algiers, a longtime institution, landmark institution in Cambridge and Harvard Square. What's happening there?
I know. Well, you know, people may remember, if you're familiar with Harvard Square, it's the restaurant that's up the stairs right next to the movie theater there. Executive arts editor, I'm blanking on the name.
The Brattle.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm your Siri today.
Yeah, no, that's right. You are. Thank you. Right next to the Brattle Theater. It's a charming restaurant. It had closed its doors, really, nearly a year ago. And public protests and everybody else came to their, you know, rescue and said, no. And it turns out the owner was ill and there was a real problem with keeping the doors open. Another guy took it over. They've been doing really good work. This guy's name is Sammy Herbawi. He's the owner of Andala Coffee House in Central Square, and he rescued it from closing. And as he says, the landlord just doesn't want to renew our lease. They're paying their rent. Let me tell you something. That rent's high in Harvard Square. But why it's going away is because Michael Shelflo, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, is opening his third Harvard Square location, an eatery that's going to be called Longfellow. So that's what's going to go in this place. And the Algiers has been there so long, 45 years.
What does it serve? What kind of stuff?
It's kind of Middle Eastern. It's where I learned to, there's a great lentil dish that I first had there, and I thought, I like lentils. This is great. And it's kind of, you know, funky with great coffee, and all manner of folks go through there. It's just one of those places that has a unique space.
Yeah.
Everything is going so down the way of homogeneity to me. You know,
Harvard
Square. Well, not just in Harvard Square,
everywhere.
But all around.
Yeah,
you go someplace. I don't want to see the Gap 15 other places. Nothing wrong with the Gap, but I'm just saying, what about the unique places that bring the flavor? And we're losing those, and this one is going away. And by the way, I'm not trying to slam Michael Shelflo, that I cannot pronounce his last name. I'm so sorry. One of his restaurants is Alden and Harlow, which has gotten a lot of. I haven't been there, but Waypoint I have been to, and that's some of the best food I've ever had. So this is not a slam against him. It's just there ought to be a way to sort of honor both people, if you will. And it's a shame that if they were paying their rent, and they are, that the landlord decided, well, you know, time up for you. I want to just move you out in favor of a new thing.
So yeah. Callie Crossey from Under the Radar. What's on Under the Radar at 6 o'clock this Sunday night?
Well, on our local news front, we're looking at in Dorchester, where they are trying to tackle the issue of problem, what's called problem properties. It's one that's all across the country and the city, and nobody knows quite what to do. Are they abandoned? Are they vacant? These
yeah.
are the kinds of properties that in the past few years or months in the Dorchester area, they've had some fires. Now we're very attuned to these fires in these places, right, where people have lost lives and other folks may take up residence there. You don't know. Turns out it's kind of difficult for the city to deal with those problem properties. So that's one thing. A woman named Mary Franklin is mad and says that she didn't get her 3,000 signatures as she was trying to run for mayor because she was sabotaged by two of the other candidates. Because of the way that the people who were gathering the signatures phrased the questions for them, that put her at a disadvantage. So that's an interesting story. And then adding to our banking front, Berkshire Bank is acquiring Worcester Commerce Bank and moving into Boston, in the Seaport District, it is rumored. So there's I've been told by my contributors there, trying to be the next fleet. And by the way, we're also highlighting the fabulous 19th year of the Roxbury International Film Festival. There's one really scary movie called I'm Still Here about child kidnapping, and another really interesting one about George Clinton and the Parliament Funk and what happens behind the scenes.
Oh,
the
really?
Whole full range at the Museum of Fine Arts of the next 10 days going on now.
Callie, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Callie Crossley joins us every week, of course. You can keep up with her Sundays right here on 89.7 WGBH at 6 for Under the Radar with Callie Crossley. Up next, writer, poet, filmmaker, screenwriter Sherman Alexie is here to talk about his latest book. It's a memoir about his relationship with his mother. He's next on 89.7 WGBH Boston Public Radio.
He's Jim Browdy.
And she's Marjorie Egan.
And this is 89.7 WGBH, WGBH HD1, Boston.
Online at WGBHnews.org.
Boston's local NPR.
Hi, it's Jim Browdy. I'll be back on Monday, but the Boston Public Radio Obsessed Tote Bag will not be. That's right. Today is your last chance to choose this truly iconic, life-changing, planet-saving canvas tote bag as your thank you gift when you support Boston Public Radio on WGBH. You have until 2 p.m. After that, this tote bag will be totes gone. So get yours now when you give online at WGBHnews.org or call 888-897-9424. And thanks.
I am not convinced that Jim isn't somewhere in this room right now
doing
all of this, looking over our shoulder. But, of course, where would we be at NPR and BPR without the tote bag?
Exactly.
Which you can have only for one more hour. And then, as I just said, it becomes vintage after an hour. You'll never be able to get the obsessed tote bag again. And you can get that by giving just $12.50 a month. Call 1-888-897-9424 or go online to WGBHnews.org, as we've been describing. And for anybody who's here in the BPL right now, Marjorie is modeling it. It's
the
very
BPR tote bag.
Fetching with a green and orange, two of my favorite colors, by the way.
Yes, it is.
Logo.
Yep. And
perfect.
Then this side.
We have the iconic blue and white WGBH local logo saying Boston's local NPR.
Yeah.
You can only get this, again, for just one more hour.
One more hour.
1-888-897-9424.
And like I said before, it's kind of cool. I mean, like you said, it's the blue on one side, the orange and green on the other side, and you can carry everything in it and last forever. It's got really big straps. You can throw it in the washing machine.
I bet your dog could fit in there, Marjorie.
My dog could fit in there. My dog is a little teeny tiny thing. He's only a 10-pounder, so he could fit in there. But it's really kind of neat, and it only is available for another hour. And Obsessed comes from Jim's obsession with so many things, and that's why we have the Obsessed thing as kind of the motto of Boston Public Radio. So you can get it for $12.50 a month. And as I said before, that's not a huge amount of money. You are welcome to give much more than that if you're in a position to do that. We would absolutely love that. But for $12.50 a month, you can get the tote bag. It's easy on your wallet. Just participate right off your credit card, $12 a month, and then you will give us an idea of how much we have to spend the whole year, which is really important to our budgeters, so they know how much they can make. Very sturdy, Obsessed, and big, bold quotes. Show you're a fan of Boston Public Radio. Sometimes I go to the supermarket, and I have this bag, and people say, wow. You know, they say they listen to Boston Public Radio. I say, well, you know. I'm on Boston Public Radio. I just want you to know. Of course, they're always very, very impressed, or maybe they don't really care.
And then you take their money.
And I take their money. That's right. So 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org. Only 1 hour. It is 12:58. We're done in an hour, and the tote bag is done in an hour as well.
And in all seriousness, your contributions really, really do matter. We were saying this when Emily Rooney was here, because Emily and I have both been here for a long time at GBH. We've seen the ups and downs. We are only able to do the programming that we do. In Emily's case, it's media criticism, where she's one of the few in the country who are doing that and really launched that concept in modern times. For me, it's being able to do the arts coverage that we do that you don't find anywhere else. And of course, with Boston Public Radio, it's 3 hours of great local conversation with people like Sherman Alexie, the great author, writer, who has just sat down, we'll be talking to in a moment, that you get to hear because of your support. So call 1-888-897-9424.
It is kind of neat, actually, to have a live radio show like down at the Boston Public Library. We have people out here that are watching. It's kind of cool, and to see how it's done is kind of a fun thing, as opposed to being in the studio. And that's a big investment for WGBH to be down here at the Boston Public Library. So your contributions pay for everything that goes on here, pays for our ability to be here on Tuesdays and Fridays, and pays for our salaries, which kind of matters to me. So anyway, 888-897-9424. The tote bag is only available until 2. You can give securely online on WGBHnews.org. Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. As I just said, it is Friday. That means we are live from our WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library. Jared Bowen is in for Jim Browdy, who will be back on Monday. And we are joined, as Jared just said, by the award-winning writer Sherman Alexie. He's got a new book out. You've heard of him. He's written beautiful things, poets. He's very well-known, famous for all this stuff. And his new book is entitled You Don't Have to Say You Love Me. It's a compendium of poems, essays, vignettes inspired by his mother's death. I want to point out, Sherman, for all the people that came in and asked me when he's going to be here, I was exactly right. It was 1 o'clock. We had a few of your fans came by earlier this morning, wanted to know when you're showing up. So 1 o'clock, and here it is, 1 o'clock. But if you miss him here, he's going to be at the Memorial Church in Harvard Yard tonight at 7 o'clock at an event sponsored by the Harvard Bookstore. Great to meet you, Sherman. It's wonderful to have you here in person. Thank you very much for coming in. You've written a book that is, you can fly through. It's a page-turner, a poignant story about your relationship with your mother. Give people an idea of what the book is about who haven't had the chance to read it yet.
Well, my mother was one of the last speakers of the old way of speaking our tribal language, the Spokane dialect of the Salish language. She was highly traditional, very religious, incredibly intelligent, industrious, mean, volatile, unpredictable, sometimes cruel, often cold, and I think an undiagnosed bipolar person and a grandiose fabulist. And
yeah.
I loved her, and I'm exactly like her.
But you also talk in the book, and it's fascinating, because you talk about your father. You know, you had a tough time with your mother growing up. You talk about screaming at her one time. I guess you were mad at her for quilting too much, and what are you doing with those quilts, and calling her an old bag, the sorts of things mothers don't like to hear. So you had this volatile relationship with her, and yet a much nicer opinion of your father.
Well, my father was easy to love. He was passive. He never risked anything. I mean, he really gave up on life at the age of 18. And he settled back into a lifetime of chronic alcoholism and lack of ambition. It's easy to love somebody who lacks ambition. It's hard to love somebody who demands attention. And my mother demanded attention. So she died in July 2015. And in the aftermath, hundreds of poems came to me. And I thought I would write a book of poems, but then I was diagnosed with a meningioma, a benign brain tumor, and had brain surgery a few months after my mom died. And in the aftermath of that, I started writing nonfiction. So I guess you could say the nonfiction in this memoir is brain damaged. So
doesn't read brain damaged, let me tell you.
Well, I was fascinated by what that moment, that time must have been like. Because obviously throughout your life you think a lot about your relationship with your mother and your interaction and what her impact on you is. But then what happened? How does that manifest itself that you have to write about it after her death?
Well, I think her death demanded it. And I think she demanded, I mean, I don't believe in ghosts, as I say in the memoir, but I see them all the time. And I think her death and she, in some form or another, whether, you know, as some subconscious desire on my part, she demanded to be written about, because I never really wrote about her in my fiction and poetry. This is really the first extended look at my mother and my relationship with her. And I think she called out to me for that.
Well, that's interesting, because you also talk about how there were elements about your life that she wouldn't share with you or tried to hold back because you had used a lot of your life, as any writer does, in writing previously.
Yes, she kept secrets. But she did that before I was a writer. I mean, in writing this memoir and fact-checking with my siblings and often disagreeing, as we all do with our siblings, about memory, you know, I was discovered that my mother told her life story to all of us, but told us parts. Hmm. And it was partly truth, partly fiction, so that really together we hold her history, but we hold such radically different parts of it that it's like this jigsaw puzzle that still has 45 pieces missing. And it's maddening and aggravating and exactly her, that even from the grave she's controlling us.
We're talking to Sherman Alexie. His new book is You Don't Have to Say You Love Me. You grew up in Washington State in an Indian reservation, and you talked about growing up in HUD housing. It was a tough childhood financially, obviously, for your mother and for you and your siblings.
Well, I grew up poor in the United States, and my variety was Native American, but I share this story with millions of other Americans from poor places in the United States. So throughout my career, I've met folks from all sorts of backgrounds who talk about the ways in which poverty affected them and the way in which it continues to affect us. And I think considering what's happening in this government, I think a lot of people are going to be turning to my work and work like mine to emotionally deal with the poverty that's coming and the increasing poverty that's going to happen.
But give people a little bit of a sense of your childhood in terms of the education and the opportunities you may not have had or did have.
Well, I was born in 1966. So in the late 1960s and early 70s, my reservation was still, I mean, I didn't have running water or electricity until I was seven. I lived in a one-room bedroom 19th century house with my mother, father, five siblings, and various mixes of cousins and aunts and uncles and grandparents. So, and it wasn't until I was 7 years old that we got new government housing, HUD House, Housing and Urban Development, which was the first new house I ever moved into, and it wasn't finished. It's still not finished 4 decades later. So there were random jobs. There were random government programs. So we were really dependent in a lot of ways on the randomness of the United States government and their commitment to honoring the treaties that we signed and giving us what they promised. And we couldn't always give them those promises. And like a lot of people, poor or not, in stressful situations, my parents drank. They were alcoholics. My dad died in 2003 of alcoholism. But my mother, when I was 7 years old, after a very violent and dangerous house party, woke us up, the children, at 3 a.m. and dragged us to a cafe in Chihuahua, a little white town near our reservation. And it was there she promised that she would never drink again. And after decades of lying and manipulating and being undependable, that was one promise that she kept. She stayed sober for the rest of her life, and that's why I'm still alive.
Is it difficult to root around in all of that when you sit down to write a book like this?
Oh, it's terrible, and it makes me feel very vulnerable. I mean, I'm sitting in public here with all these lights, and there's a coffee shop over there, and so this sort of is a metaphor for my life right now. I'm realizing that writing the book was the first stage of this grieving process. in public because I'm a writer. Yeah. And then this second stage is bringing it to the world and hearing other people's stories and experiencing other people's reactions and hearing about other people's mothers.
I'm always fascinated by that because I think I'm actually probably fairly a private person. So what is that like to know that, especially if you had fans who were coming here earlier today wanting to know when you're here, that so many of these people know they have your story. They're literally carrying your story around with them, and they know so much about you.
They know what I've told them about me. I mean, as I say in the book, there are family mysteries I can't solve. There are family mysteries I'm unwilling to solve. So I'm still in control of the entire story. Yeah. I still only apportion out parts of it. Again, just like my mother. So I'm treating my audience like my children, I guess.
But, you know, even though there are obviously unique things that are very different, I mean, I did not grow up on an Indian reservation with moving from house to house and did not have a mother with bipolar disorders. There's a lot that is very universal in your book about relationships with your mother, particularly when your mother gets sick and the decisions you have to make. Well, actually, before I get to the part where she gets sick, you hadn't spoken to her the whole time you were in college.
For 3 years I was in college for 7 years.
Yes. So,
but 3 of those years we didn't speak.
And your then girlfriend who became your wife, I believe,
it
was a different one. Okay. But the then girlfriend.
I didn't have that many girlfriends.
Okay. She took a dim view of you not speaking to your mom.
Well, it's not surprising that the woman I was dating and was in love with might take a dim view of the way in which I was treating another woman that I loved.
Mm-hmm.
That it might indicate the kind of man I was. So she was completely right.
Yeah.
And at one point, when my mom and dad came to give me money for rent at college, my girlfriend at that point convinced me to try to go out and reconcile with my mother, and my mother ignored me. So I came back angry and punched a wall, and my girlfriend left, as she should have, and walked away. We stayed together for a few years after that. But, you know, as I say in the book, at that point, I didn't even realize how incapable I was of providing joy for another person, joy inside a relationship. I wasn't even providing joy for myself. So it was one of those moments when your own weaknesses are so apparent. I mean, that's one of the things I tried to do in the book, is not to be heroic.
Yep.
I mean, I share my mother's weaknesses, and I wanted to make sure the book clarified that, made that very clear.
Well, speaking of that joy, I was really struck this encounter you have when you know that your mother's on her deathbed. You've been called home. You arrive home to find your sister, and she's laughing, and I'll let you tell us why. But
Well, my sister called me in Seattle. Our reservation is about 300 miles away, so I drove. My wife and kids and I drove to the reservation. Hurried, because she said, come here, you need to come home now. And I thought my mom was dying then. She was terminally ill, but I thought she was dying far sooner than we expected. So we hurry home. My sister's waiting for me outside, and I know thousands of Indians, and I've met thousands more, and I've never had any of them greet me formally. it's not part of the culture. And so to see my sister outside was very shocking, and I ran out to her, and I thought she was going to tell me that mom was gone. I thought I was too late. I thought I missed it. And there was a sense of grief and relief. But then my sister said, no, I just had to warn you. Mom, she's alive. She's alive. But mom is being affectionate.
Which
one? And that's why I kind of gave away a bunch of, but what I want to ask is, I was so fascinated by that moment, because here you have all of this, you've been treated so terribly by her for a lot of your life. And then finally you find this woman who wants to love you. I mean,
but at the end.
But what do you do with that moment? Do you embrace her?
That's one of the contradictions. I mean, I loved my mother, but I'm always angry. I've always been angry at those movies or books where the dying person gets to reconcile.
Yeah.
They've spent their whole lifetime as a horrible human being, and then all of a sudden you're supposed to forgive them? Right now, I'm just unpacking the sort of surface religiosity of that.
Yeah.
The Christianity of that. I'm not familiar with other religions as much, but I'm the forced forgiveness.
The forced forgiveness.
The expectation of forgiveness.
And not as
I
easy.
Not easy. No. And as I say in the book, I mean, I'm supposed to forgive? I mean, no. There are people I will hate even when I'm ashes and dust.
But you have bipolar disorder. Your mother.
I'm officially diagnosed, yes, and medicated.
And medicated.
Yes.
Because that's a big. Because even were she diagnosed at a younger age, the drugs that are available now were not available for her when she was a young woman. Even if she has known about this, am I right?
Well, I mean, she was an indigenous woman.
Yep.
Who are the demographic most likely to be sexually assaulted, murdered, disappeared.
Was?
Yes. So, and treated poorly by health services to this day. They're still the group most likely to be abused by institutions in the United States and in Canada. So if my mother would have been diagnosed with bipolarism or manic depression, as, yep, they would have called it back then, or some other thing, schizophrenia or borderline personality, she would have been institutionalized. She would,
that's,
have been,
right,
committed.
That's right.
Beyond any of our control, and she would have been treated probably with, I mean, it would have become One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. She would have been medicated with these utterly debilitating medicines that would have turned her catatonic.
So Sherman Alexie, in the book, by the way, is You Don't Have to Say You Love Me, when you have the poem about your mother with the cat, tearing a cat up, was that a metaphor? Did she really do that?
She told me when she was a child that she and another female relative came across a stray cat on the reservation, and they grabbed it by the legs and tore it apart.
Oh, okay. So maybe there was more than manic depression going on.
Well, in the poem and in my life, I ask, what would make a kid so violent? Now, my mother wasn't a sociopath. My mother was capable of empathy. My mother was capable of loving and caring about people. My mother had a sense of guilt. But what would make two children want to hurt something so bad? And then you think it's because they were hurt so terribly. So there are people who hurt my mother, and I don't know that story. I'll never know that story. There were people who hurt her tremendously when she was young, and I don't know who they are.
You began this interview by saying that you're so much your mother. How do you guard against that in your own family?
Well, diagnosis. I take my meds. I have therapy. I have 21st century mental health care. I have privilege. I have good health insurance. And I have all of this. But if you put me, the same person I am now, and put me in a job without health insurance, if you put me on a reservation or in any city or town without proper health insurance, without proper care, then you get somebody who's in serious mental trouble, serious physical danger. And that's one of the great crimes of the bill that's going to be passed, the elimination of this, because all sorts of poor people like me, unlike my mother, and people like that who could be helped by one bottle of pills a month aren't going to be able to get it.
Yeah, well, we're hoping that maybe it won't get passed. Let me ask you something about the way you wrote the book. We're talking with Sherman Alexie. The book is You Don't Have to Say Love Me. Of course, you're a poet. You've written many poems over the years. But it's written in a very different style. You go back and forth between prose and poetry, and you have some very short. It reminded me a little bit, it's very different, but in some ways, of the George Sanders Lincoln and the Bardo, where he did these very short paragraphs and very short chapters. But it's a wonderful technique because it, I don't know, I just really liked what you did. Explain that to people.
I will happily take any comparisons to George Sanders.
I know.
The man is a genius.
He's a genius.
And he's a sweetheart.
Oh,
he's a sweetheart genius.
He's a lovely man.
Those two things don't go together all the time.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
So he's quite the anomaly in the world.
Yeah.
Well, part of it is, and my wife noticed this after she read the first draft, she said to me, Sherman, your book is like a quilt.
That's great.
And my mom was a master quilter. My mom, in fact, for most of our childhood, our primary income source was selling her quilts. That I hate. Well, I didn't hate them. They were like siblings. They became such a part of our life. And they were the favorite siblings. I mean, yeah. Her quilts were the favored kids and the ones who did things. And I mean, the end papers of the hardcover are actually the quilt my mother made for my wedding to my wife. So if you look on the inside there, on the inside cover, that's the quilt.
Oh!
Yeah, that's the quilt my mother
that's
made.
It's a beautiful quilt.
Yes. Oh, no, she was amazing. She was an artist. And it was my first, you know, I didn't realize it at the time because you don't think about these things, but my mother was an artisan, was an artist, and her quilts were her art. And so really growing up, I had no idea that my first experience with world art was in my mother's hands. I had no clue. I didn't even really think about it in terms of that until this memoir. In fact, the second stage of this process, I'm realizing that what I've written is this epic story of this incredibly complicated woman who, were it not for racism and sexism and classism, would have led our tribe, would have been an amazing historical figure. I've really written one of those white guy books about famous white guys. You know, like Lyndon Johnson, volume 97.
Yeah.
Like Lyndon Johnson deserves 97 volumes. So this is Lillian Alexei. The book could be called Lillian Alexei, volume 1. And there's not going to be a volume 2.
So Sherman Alexei, who does, given the history you just shared with us, who is it that's calling you a member of the liberal elite? It seems a very inapropos way to describe you.
Well, right-wingers of all varieties. I mean, but
really?
they call every liberal person elite.
Yeah.
Even liberal people call liberal people elite. And they don't even think about the fact. I mean, like they call us disconnected from middle America. I was president of my high school's chapter of the Future Farmers of America.
Congratulations.
I was prom royalty in a farm town. I was captain of a basketball team where there were 11 white boys and me. So the county where I went to high school voted 72% for Trump.
Wow.
So I am middle America. And so many of who we call the liberal elite grew up in middle America and chose to leave.
Yeah.
So and chose to pursue urban life, city life, diversity, intellectualism, all the great things about a city like Boston. I'm realizing I've never been here in good weather. In 25 years,
really?
I've never been here in good weather.
Your lucky day.
And I'm feeling patriotic about Boston. I want to go throw some tea in the bay.
Yeah, it's a lovely day, and you're in a great part of Boston,
yes,
too, the
yes.
historic part of Boston. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
While we're veering into political territory, and of course there are lots of questions about arts and arts funding in this administration and how it all could go away, how fundamental did it impact who you are and what opportunity you had?
In 1991, in the fall of 1991, after applying as a senior in college for an NEA grant in poetry, I got this phone call on a landline. It was so long ago, it was a landline phone call. And it was the National Endowment for the Arts telling me I want a fellowship for poetry. I was a poor reservation Indian kid who had graduated college, and with my liberal arts degree, was working minimum wage as a secretary for a high school exchange program. A few months later, the check arrived. I quit my job and decided I was going to work full-time as a poet as long as the money lasted. I've never had another job again. I've been a full-time writer since that NEA grant. So that NEA grant started this quarter-century career. And there's so many other writers from all sorts of walks of life who have the same story.
I'm just curious, how long did it last? Did this last for months? Did it last for a year?
It lasted for about 11 months.
11 months.
And then I used loans for the next 4 or 5 months, and then the money for my first book deal came.
Fantastic.
So, and then I had to pay back the loans. But I was really, my bank account was empty. Empty when I got the NEA grant. Empty.
So let me ask you another political question, Sherman Alexei. For years, we have talked about the plight of Native Americans and the conditions on reservations and the terrible job of poverty. We don't seem to do very much. And the plight continues.
Well, I mean, one of the things that we need to be talking about in this country is not the plight of Native Americans, just the plight. It's the plight of poverty and income inequality, of government corruption. In fact, really, the United States with the election of Trump is becoming one giant Indian reservation where ordinary citizens are subject to the whims of a corrupt government, corrupt corporations, and corrupt churches. The unholy trinity of capitalism. The state, the corporation, and the church. And that's what's happening to everybody. But that's what's been happening to us all along, to Native Americans all along. So perhaps now there'll be more empathy for us. And I saw that a little bit in the Dakota Pipeline protests.
Oh, yes.
Where amazing solidarity among tribes that have had centuries, I mean, millennia of animosity came together and hundreds of tribes, thousands of Native Americans came together to protest it, but there was also non-Natives, so many non-Natives involved and interested.
Veterans.
Veterans. So there were so many groups of people who you wouldn't otherwise think of as a coalition. So I think, even though the pipeline's flowing and there are court cases still brewing about whether it will continue, I think it's that kind of energy that's going to help us with climate change, with income inequality. So if you want to know how to live under a Trump administration, ask an Indian.
You know, before you go, I want to mention, I don't know if you have it in your out, but the podcast, is the podcast in your out? If not, I'm going to mention it. A Tiny Sense of Accomplishment is Sherman Alexie's podcast, and it's talking a lot about politics as increasingly political focus, right?
Well, it's been in suspended animation because of my brain surgery, but we're coming back.
Good.
We talk politics, basketball, books, poetry, everything under the sun.
Well, thank you very, very much for coming in. I much appreciate it.
Thank you.
It is such a delight to have you here. And you get applause. How fantastic. Sherman Alexie is an author, poet, screenwriter, and filmmaker. His latest book is a memoir entitled You Don't Have to Say You Love Me. He'll be at the Memorial Church in Harvard Yard tonight at 7 at an event sponsored by the Harvard Bookstore. Coming up, it's a contest for the ages. Two of GBH's Pledge Masters face off over the week's news. Find out who really practices what he preaches and lives and breathes by our airwaves. That's next on Boston Public Radio.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jared Bowen is in for Jim Browdy, who will be back on Monday. Since it is Friday, we are broadcasting live from our WGBH studio at the Boston Public Library. And since it is Friday, we are having a news quiz, but it is a very, very special news quiz. Joining us for a pledge quiz rematch are our pledge masters, Andy Hicks and Edgar B. Hurwicke III. When they aren't pledging, Edgar B. Hurwicke III is busy running WGBH's News Curiosity Desk, and Andy Hicks is a producer at WGBH, on-air fundraising and digital content. Andy and Edgar, thank you very much for coming back. And we always like to point out at these moments that Edgar B. Hurwicke III is not only in the Curiosity Desk and running cruises all over the place. He was a former Jeopardy contestant.
Thank you, Marjorie, and thank you for setting me up that way, because now there's extra pressure. So I really appreciate that. And then for the record, I don't know that I would call it a Jeopardy champion so much as was a crashing and burning on national television.
But at least you got there.
At least I got there.
I mean, that's very, very impressive. That's very, very impressive. Andy, have you been on Jeopardy, or would you like to add anything to your resume?
I have never been on Jeopardy, but I have taken the online quiz multiple times, and I'm waiting for Alex to call any day now.
Okay.
Let me tell you. I want to go on that show.
That's right, Andy. I'm more of a Price is Right guy myself. I think that's where I would do best. So
yeah, I used to do pretty well on Wheel of Fortune. You ever do Wheel of Fortune?
Yeah.
Yeah. At home in my living room, but I don't think I'd be too nervous, like, if I went on TV to do it.
Do you think so?
Yes, I do think so.
What about Let's Make a Deal? Could we do Let's Make a Deal?
Is that the one you guessed how much the refrigerator was worth?
Yeah.
Which one was that?
It's a bunch of different curtains, and you got to pick them. And
I think it was Price is Right, but I know Let's Make a Deal, people dressed up in crazy costumes.
That's true.
Okay, crazy costumes.
Anyway,
I just want to ease your nerves, because Jim and I took the news quiz about 6 months ago, and we only got one question right the whole time.
So it's nerve-wracking.
It is very nerve-wracking. So you want to start over there, Jared?
Okay, who am I asking the question to? I never can remember the rules for the news quiz
just
when I'm filling in.
Your
That's because I'm not sure there actually are rules. I listen to the news quiz every week, and they seem to vary from week to week.
It's the Wild West out here,
right,
kind of the OK Corral.
Because I'm looking at you,
yes.
You get the first question.
All right, Jared.
President Trump has been jet-setting around the world and admiring the architecture. Here's Seth Meyers.
During a meeting with the president of today, President Trump said, quote, "We did a good job building the canal, despite the fact that the canal was constructed over a century ago." Mr. President, if you're going to keep saying stuff this dumb in front of other world leaders, could you at least wear a big bandage on your head? You know, so it seems like there's a reason.
Okay, so who did President Trump meet with on Monday?
I'm going to go with Panama.
Correct.
They're giving it to me. It was, yes, Juan Carlos Varela, the president of Panama.
Indeed, that
was
indeed.
That was the Panama
Canal.
What other canals did we build throughout the world? Fine, that was easy. It was a gimme.
Suez Canal.
Yeah.
Did we actually build that one? There's the Cape Cod
Cape
Canal.
Cape Cod Canal.
Okay, the Cape Cod Canal.
Absolutely.
The Erie Canal.
Let's be local. And speaking of being local, you could support your local public broadcasting station, 89.7 WGBH. How can they do that, Andy?
Well, they can call 888-897-9424 or give online at WGBHnews.org. They shouldn't forget, however, this tote bag, which, by the way, is very sturdy, made of canvas, has the word obsessed on it because we're all obsessed with Jim and Marjorie and Jared when he fills in, too. Is Jared doing a good job, folks, this week? Jared's doing
Woo!
A good job.
Let's hear it for Jared. You know, to be honest, the first thing I thought when I saw that bag is how I was like, that looks surprisingly sturdy.
Very sturdy.
Is the right word.
It's gotten me through the several winters now.
It's sturdy, but at the moment it's a bit ephemeral because it's going away at 2 p.m. This is a limited time opportunity to pick up this wonderful tote bag.
That's
folks
right.
Folks in the library cafe area here, I'm looking at you. You can get your hands on one of these.
That's right.
I see you guys.
Feel free to donate. Don't procrastinate. We'll take money from everyone, anywhere, anytime. No matter. Okay. You ready, Andy?
Yes.
Okay, here's... And by the way, I love the way they kind of seamlessly segue into this.
I know. I was impressed.
Speaking of locally, and then you're off to the races.
Except for the segue is always speaking of something. Yeah. I mean, it's not exactly...
Okay, well, here's the challenge.
Seamless, but
next time...
Try to do one without the
speaking of.
All right, I'll take that challenge.
All right, you can just kind of slide right in.
All right.
Okay, here we go, Andy. Trump fans could win a special treat, but one man's prize is another man's nightmare. Here is Jimmy Fallon.
Trump is running a fundraising contest where the winner gets to have with him. James Comey was like, trust me, that is not a good prize. Don't do it.
Okay. What prize does the contest winner receive?
I believe they get dinner with him.
Correct. Yes. That is correct. Very good.
Absolutely. And when you're actually out shopping for dinner tonight, when you're not eating with the president, the WGBH Obsessed Tote Bag comes in very handy. If you're carrying home your vegetables, your produce, your meat, whatever you got. Again, this is, I believe it is $10 a month. It's going away at the end of this program. So please make that call.
Yeah, and speaking of that
$12.50 a month.
$12.50 a month. And that is as a sustainer. As I hope you guys know, this sustainer program is something that has been very good for us and hopefully good for you, which is the idea is, you know, you sign up for whatever that amount is. If it's $12.50 a month, we can thank you with the tote bag. And that money just comes out of your account every month, comes to WGBH so that we can do programs like this. The idea is that it's low impact on your budget. It's a big impact here. A lot of folks have taken advantage of it. It allows us to plan much better. So when we do things like say, hey, we want to build a studio at the Boston Public Library, we can plan for that because we've got this reliable income coming because we know we have your support. So please, if you can do it, make that call right now.
Make the call. 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org. The tote bag is low impact on the environment, much like becoming a sustainer is low impact on your budget. There we go.
Lovely.
Ha.
How impressive are these guys?
Is this what they looked like the last 3 hours?
Yeah, I think they put us to shame.
I don't think we were so polished, Marjorie.
No, I don't think we were so polished as they were. Okay, Jared, it's your turn.
Okay, Edgar. Who knew that Vladimir Putin was such a humanitarian?
This is a crazy story. Did you hear what Vladimir Putin did? Vladimir Putin has offered asylum to Yeah, asylum, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, when she heard, Melania Trump said, hey, what about me?
So who did Vladimir Putin offer asylum to?
All right, on this one, I'm going to go with, and I think this is what Conan was about to say then. I think that this was very tricky editing on the part of the producers, because I think what he was going to say is former FBI Director James Comey.
Oh, boy.
Somebody has been boning up.
And I was like, that's tricky editing.
This is very impressive. You've gotten everything right.
So far, so good.
Yeah.
So far, so good.
Okay.
Thank God.
This is where you blow it, Andy.
Yeah. I can't
okay,
wait.
Okay, Andy, pressure's on.
Okay.
In the West Wing, a certain pot is calling the teapot stout.
This is the latest. This is kind of crazy. Trump advisor Steve Bannon told reporters yesterday that the White House has been doing fewer press briefings because Sean Spicer... That's what Bannon said. Bannon said Sean Spicer... Bannon then went home to his mirrorless house.
Okay. According to Steve Bannon, who can be a little... Well, I don't gonna say that. According to Steve Bannon, why is the White House doing fewer press briefings?
Oh, man. mirrorless house. I'm going to blow this one intentionally because I don't know the answer to it. Because Sean Spicer is a vampire in a windowless house. Mirrorless house. Clearly.
That's a good guess.
I don't know. Yeah.
But that's not right. Do you want to try for it? Oh, you know what we were going
to
do? We were going to see if anybody from...
We were going to throw it to the crowd.
We forgot to mention that. There is a microphone
over
there. And we can ask if anybody wants to be the lifeline. Molly is running right out now. If anybody wants to guess what the answer is, why the White House is doing fewer press briefings. But maybe we're too soon on this one, but the next question.
That's right. We'll have for the next one. If somebody at the library here wants to step up and, hey, if you're just listening on the air right now, you still have time.
Yes. Okay. What's your first name?
Richard.
Okay, Richard.
All right, Richard.
What's the answer?
Because Sean Spicer is too fat.
That's correct.
Richard,
wow.
Thank you. Correct. Thank you very much.
Richard, can I ask you to stay at the mic for a second? I want to ask you a question.
Back to the mic, Richard. Question.
So,
from...
I'm just thinking if somebody's concerned about their weight and they want to lose a little weight, one way to lose a little weight is to do some local shopping, get some vegetables, get some healthy things at the grocery store. And what might be something that a person might put those groceries in, Richard?
One of your bags.
One of those tote bags. All right, Richard. Let's hear you, Richard.
Thank you very much, Richard.
It has the same colors on the other side as Stop and Shop bag.
All right, so it also has the... Thank you, Richard. Richard,
did not know that.
Describing the bag for you. So if you're a Stop and Shop, Stop and Shop shopper, this bag's going to fit in seamlessly there.
Seamlessly. Yeah.
And it's yours for just $12.50 a month as a sustainer. And don't forget, all kidding aside and all fun aside, the reason why we're asking for that support is because Boston Public Radio is powered by you. It's powered by those donations of $12.50 a month, $50 a year, $100 a year. Whatever it is, it's all of those small donations that add up to this show every day, like every day, now on Sundays as well.
That's
right.
Bringing you
local news, interesting people. It doesn't happen without you, so please make that call, 888-897-9424. Or if you're here at the library, just come on up and talk to us.
Absolutely. And Edgar mentioned earlier, we've got the wonderful Newsfeed Cafe here at the Boston Public Library. WGBH is expanding local coverage. This is just kind of the physical manifestation of that. The fact that we've been able to sort of build that newsroom over the past 5, 6, 7 years is all thanks to WGBH supporters and all thanks to WGBH sustainers. We're slowly taking over little pockets of the city. We're going to have a Celtic Sojourn studio at the Boston Tea Party ship or something.
Oh, neat!
I'm making this up. We're going to have...
Sounds good.
Exactly.
Not happening.
Innovation Hub's going to broadcast from Fenway Park. I don't even know. But the point is that your support makes all this possible. 888-897-9424, wgbhnews.org.
Okay, I forget whose turn it is.
I think it's my turn
ask
Edgar
okay.
a question.
Take it away.
All right, Edgar.
All right, Jared.
We all know that President Trump only hires people with impeccable credentials. Here's Jimmy Kimmel.
It was reported the president is planning to appoint the person who will oversee billions of dollars as head of the Department of Housing and Urban Development for the states of New York and New Jersey. And that person is, drumroll please, his son, Eric's... Yeah, for real.
So the question is, who is President Trump planning to appoint as the head of the Department of Housing and Urban Development for New York and New Jersey?
All right, well... I have a guess on this, but I'm going to try to go to the Newsfeed Cafe lifeline.
Oh, the lifeline. We have
I'm
a lifeline.
I'm going to go to the lifeline.
Is there anybody
I'm
out there?
Looking out there at the Newsfeed Cafe. If anybody out there wants to step up to the mic and help me out right now, that would be great because I'm going to get these points. Thank you. I see somebody
coming. Somebody's coming.
We've got a brave soul coming to the mic.
Okay.
It's his son Eric's wedding planner.
That is correct.
Yes.
Thank you.
What's your name, ma'am?
Kate.
Kate from where?
Needham.
Kate from Needham, thank
Needham.
You very much.
Needham.
The wedding planner is taking over the
Kate
Department of
Needham.
Housing and Urban Development for New York and New Jersey, and she's going to be overseeing all those billions of dollars. And why not? The wedding probably costs billions of dollars.
Weddings
so
are
she can
expensive.
Just,
we know how expensive weddings have become, so that's probably right in line with the kind of budget she's dealing with.
Don't you think?
Absolutely.
And budgets, you know, are something that we all have to deal with, aren't they?
Yeah, of course.
You, said?
You know, in your budget, I wonder if you might spare $12.50 a month for a good cause.
Exactly.
If you could, we could thank you with this beautiful tote bag, which is, I don't know if you've heard, but it's going away.
Yes. It's
going
away.
This is your last chance to get this tote bag.
13 minutes.
You've got only a few minutes left to get your hands on this, and then it disappears forever. Now, there will still be tote bags. We are public broadcasting, after all.
Tote bags live on.
We cannot have public broadcasting without tote bags. But this particular one, our obsessed one, which our friend let us know has the same colors as the Stop and Shop logo, is available $12.50 a month. That's how we thank you, is with this tote bag. And, of course, that $12.50 a month is making this happen. So make that call, 888-897-9424. If you're online, you can do it there very easily at WGBHnews.org.
Absolutely.
Okay, ready, Andy?
Yes.
Beyonce set the internet on fire this week.
Finally, Beyonce dropped her latest. I'm so excited. And you know when Blue Ivy met them, she was like, let me explain how things work around here. I'm the star, you're Kelly and Michelle. All right, we got that? Okay, cool. Let's make a group.
Okay, why was Beyonce in the news this week?
Oh, she gave birth?
Correct.
Yes. Yes. Birth to her twins.
Yeah. Right.
That is very, very impressive. Has she named them yet?
I don't know.
So I thought that Blue Ivy was a different name, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not up on that.
It was almost as good as Gwyneth Paltrow, who named her kid Apple.
Apple. Well, see, apples are things that you could carry home in your WGBH tote bag from the farmer's market here, actually.
And that one was good.
Twin names, tote and bag.
Tote and bag. That's very, very nice. I think you should suggest that to Beyonce. I think she'll like it.
I really think she'll I totally
think Beyonce
agree.
Listens to the news quiz.
Don't you think?
I think so.
Everyone
does. She has impeccable taste.
I think she should name them Jim and Marjorie.
I totally
absolutely.
Agree.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And again, that's $12.50 a month. Final day, by the way, that you can get the Obsessed tote bag from WGBH, Obsessed with Boston Public Radio. You're all here at the Newsfeed Cafe watching us do a radio show, which is the least visual thing ever. You must be obsessed with Jim and Marjorie. Please make that call at 888-897-9424 WGBHnews.org.
Okay, it is now time for the bonus round. As everybody knows, this is a very difficult round, but it's multiple choice. You can just kind of take a guess because they're difficult questions and almost no one ever gets the answer. Oh, this is a trivia question about me and Jared. Okay.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Ooh.
We're doing the Marjorie and Jared Bowen trivia quiz. All right? So we're going to switch it up this time. Oh, we should get the score from our producers. What is the score, please? Do we know what the score is? Oh, my God. It's tied 3-3 between Jared and Andy, and Richard has 1 point. So there you go.
That's Edgar.
What did I say? Oh, Richard from the audience.
Yes.
What did I say? Did I get your name wrong?
No.
I didn't get your name wrong.
I know. I'm Edgar.
Edgar B. Hurt
Richard
III.
Is in the audience. You're
okay.
Marjorie.
All right, I screwed that up. Okay, here we go. Question one.
Yes.
Where did Marjorie once stash her family's jewels for safekeeping? Inside a stuffed animal, that's A. Inside a hollowed-out copy of her favorite book, The Valley of the Dolls, or wrapped in Kleenex in her coat pockets? Edgar B. Hurt III, you would have no way of knowing this unless you...
I wouldn't.
But you can take a guess.
Well,
I once stashed the family jewels in there, and I lost them.
All right, so I'm going to go... This is a tough one, Marjorie, but mm-hmm. I feel like, for some reason, that the answer here is probably C.
Correct.
That makes sense.
It's just there's something about that feels right.
That is correct. I wrapped my grandmother's engagement ring in a piece of Kleenex and put it in my coat pocket.
So why exactly did you think that was going to be safer there than wherever it was?
Because our house got broken into a lot, and I thought when I moved to another neighborhood that I had to worry about, which I didn't, our house getting broken into. So I hid things all around the house, and then I forgot where I hid them.
Of those things that you hid around the house for safekeeping, what percentage were never seen again?
They were never, none of them were ever seen again. I should have just left them in the jewelry box because I never got broken into in this house, and so it was a ridiculous thing, and I lost. It was a diamond ring from my grandmother. I know.
That's hard.
And I have no rings now.
I'm sorry.
Oh, well. It's a sad tale. Wow. Move on.
All right. Well, I guess we should have switched this so that we wouldn't be talking about ourselves, but Andy. Yes.
Oh, should we switch it? It's too late now.
What is Jared Bowen's secret ingredient in deviled eggs? Is it A, saffron? Is it B, vegan mayonnaise? Or C, cornichons?
All right, so B seems like just something that you would make if you were vegan, but that's weird because it's eggs. A sounds right. Saffron. No.
No, if anybody else in the audience knows what the secret ingredient is, it's not very secret because it's cornichons, which I just put at the top on the top of the deviled egg.
Has anyone ever been to a potluck with Jared? Yeah. Anyone here?
We had a deviled egg contest. And me and Callie, and Callie won.
Well, I don't think you want to talk about that right now. If you look at the next question, Marjorie.
Whoops. Okay. All right. Well, I've sort of given this away a little bit, but I did not look at the next question. So here we go, Edgar B. Hoover III.
Yes.
What place did Jared and Marjorie come in during the legendary, one and only 2014 Boston Public Radio Deviled Egg Contest?
Oh no.
All right. So I have to give you. There were
three contestants.
There were three contestants.
Callie, Jared, and Marjorie.
So I'm going with Jared came in first. Callie came in second. Marjorie came in third.
Oh. Well, one-third of that was right.
One-third of that
Jared
was right.
So Jared came in first.
Mm-hmm. So want to try it, Andy?
Well, first I should give the number and website because I just got a note saying we should do that. 888-897-9424, WGBHnews.org. That's how you can support Boston Public Radio and pick up your obsessed tote bag. But these are the last 15 minutes, about 16 minutes left to get this tote bag. It is going away at 2 p.m. The answer to that question is, what was the question again?
What place did Jared and Marjorie come in during the legendary one and only 2014 Boston Public Radio Deviled Egg Contest?
Ah, second and third. Like, I don't know.
Correct. No. Who was second and who was third?
You didn't win.
Not win. Callie won.
Callie won. I came in last.
You came in last.
I did.
Oh.
Well, you know, Callie came in with three special deviled egg plates, three or four. She had individual deviled egg plates and the most beautiful deviled eggs you've ever seen, and they tasted fantastic. Yours were pretty good.
Pretty good? Pretty good? It's a good thing we're coming to the end of our week together.
Mine were the worst. No one liked mine at all, maybe because I didn't have a plate and I used just Cane's mayonnaise.
I brought it in a bag.
Okay, here we go. Now, what is the score, please, ladies and gentlemen? The pressure is on.
It's still tied.
4-4. I think this is your question, Jared, isn't it?
No, because I just asked the last one.
Okay.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, I'm losing it. Okay, so earlier this week, Jared and Marjorie discussed their housekeeping habits. This is humiliating. Which of the following facts is not true? A, Jared once bought himself a steam mop for his birthday. B, Jared was once an extra in a Magic Eraser commercial. This is horrible. C, police once thought Marjorie's apartment had been ransacked because it was so messy.
All right, so
I just want to say that I want to believe that all of these are true.
Yes.
Me too. I want them all to be true so badly.
So the B is mildly embarrassing. A is mildly. C seems like the one that you'd be most like sort of, cringe about that. I'm guessing C. No, okay.
The police did think my house had been.
They did not.
Really?
Yeah, they had been ransacked because it was so messy. That was very embarrassing. And
wait, so that's correct? I just got a wah-wah noise.
Yeah, because it
you
was
were supposed to find the one that was incorrect.
Oh, incorrect.
You know what the correct thing is, though? Thing is to make a contribution, to make
true.
A pledge right now. Support this radio station. Support this show. Support Jim and Marjorie. And by the way, everything that happens on 89.7, and not just 89.7, 99.5 with the classical stuff, all of the beautiful things on Channel 2, from amazing documentaries to Greater Boston to Open Studios with Jared Bowen. I mean, this is what this $12.50 a month supports. When you make that contribution for $12.50 a month, we can thank you one last time with the soon-to-be-retired obsessed tote bag.
Yes, and
so this is yours for a gift of $12.50 a month.
$12.50 a month. Those of you who are here in the Newsfeed Cafe with us can see it. It's very sturdy and very canvas. It's made of canvas, which is why it's canvassy. Mm-hmm. But the rest of you folks, I should let you know, this is the strongest tote bag I have felt.
It's great.
It's a very strong
tote
bag.
It's great. They last forever.
This will last forever, and apparently they do sort of look like the Stop and Shop bags. So if Stop and Shop has some kind of special deal where you bring their tote bag in You can just say, they'll be like, is that a Stop and Shop bag? And you can hold it the other way and be like, yep, totally. And then you get your food
for
free.
I don't think they're made out of cotton, though, heavy cotton like this is.
No,
and
probably
you can throw that in the washing machine on hot with your, you know what, you can sprint, you know, you use your shout to get the stains out. And by the way, we should point out, the other thing that was true, and I'm not going to let you get away with this, Jared did buy himself a steam mop for his birthday.
You know what?
I mean, how pathetic is that?
No.
I need a steam mop.
I can now make my deviled eggs on my bathroom floor.
Yeah. You know, I got to say, every birthday I say to myself, what do I want for my birthday?
A steam mop.
That's what I really want.
I did not come here to be bullied today.
No. He got himself
Jared probably told all of his friends and family, like, I need a steam mop, guys.
I'll tell you what,
everyone got you cool things.
I'll tell you
like,
what
no,
would vindicate
this.
You, yeah. Jared. What would vindicate you on this is I think you need to talk with the Pledge folks, and maybe next time we do Pledge, we offer as a thank you gift a steam mop.
A steam mop.
And you see how popular that is and tell people, look, you everybody know, loves a steam mop. So if you want to vote for steam mop, why not make a contribution now in any amount at WGBHnews.org. There's a spot there where you can type in a little note, say, I want steam mops.
What is a steam mop?
It's a mop that uses steam, and it cleans really, really well, and you don't have to use soap or anything like that.
You plug it in, it gets hot,
you move it around your
floor. It's clear you don't know what it is because the cops had to come to your house because it was so dirty, right?
Oh,
so, I mean,
no.
Obviously.
It was a long time ago.
Right.
I'm better now.
By the way, the number, if you want to make that contribution, because we are running short
on time.
The show is almost over, 888-897-9424. I'm going to give that to you again, 888-897-9424. Keep in mind, one of the things our colleague Brian O'Donovan from A Celtic Sojourn always says is when you make that contribution, you're sort of making a vote for the show that you love. So if Boston Public Radio is the thing that you're tuning in and day out, if this is the piece of the station that you really rely on, now is the time to do it. The week is almost over. There's only about 10 minutes left. So make that contribution now. If you've been thinking about it and going, you know, I've been listening, I should do this. Yes, you should. Now is the time.
And we should mention that 70%, and you've probably heard this number if you've listened to this program before or any of these fundraisers, 70% of our funding comes from individual support. We do have a few underwriters here and there. There's a little bit from the federal government, but 70% of it is on you. So thank you so much. If you have given, if you haven't given, make that call, 888-897-9424, or online at WGBHnews.org.
You guys were great.
You guys are
really good at this.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Jared and I do an okay job.
You guys are great.
Jim
you
does
do.
An okay job, but I mean, we just don't have that certain pledge panache. You know what I'm saying?
that certain sick gift for begging for money.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Okay, I cannot read the screen. Oh, we have Carmen Ortiz this week. Thank you very much for telling. Oh, BPR. No, okay, I goofed that up. It's not us. We don't have Carmen Ortiz. She's a former U.S. attorney. BPR weekend, that's on noontime on Sunday. So Carmen Ortiz, a former U.S. attorney, will be there with them at noontime.
All right, Edgar B. Hero the third runs WGBH's News Curiosity Desk, and Andy Hicks is a producer of on-air fundraising and digital content. Thank you both for being here, and thank you all for listening to another edition of Boston Public Radio. Tune in Monday for Jonathan Gruber and his take on the American Health Care Act. And next Thursday, our cinema classic challenge is Jaws. So brush up on your Steven Spielberg this weekend. Our crew is Chelsea Murs, Amanda McGowan, Tori Bedford, Jason Teresky, Molly Boygon, Christina Bienet. Our engineer is John McClaw Parker. We're a production of WGBH.
Jared Bowen, what is on Open Studio at 8:30 tonight, please?
Tonight on Open Studio, we're going to take you to some of the best museum exhibitions you can see right now, including Matisse in the studio at the Museum of Fine Arts, the fabulous Frank Stella exhibition, his prints at the Addison Gallery because he went there. He is from Massachusetts. And we'll also show you the Irving Penn exhibition that was recently at Lesley University's that you can now see at the Met.
Fantastic. I want to thank everybody that came down here to the Boston Public Library today. We really appreciate seeing everybody. I hope you had a good time. I certainly did. I want to thank you, Jared, for filling in for Jim Browder this week. It was really fun. As everybody's pointed out, I've never talked so much in my entire life in my career here at Boston Public Radio. Jim will be back on Monday, and we miss him, and we'll be happy to see him. I want to thank you guys again for coming in. Bye.
It's time to support Boston Public Radio on WGBH. Listener contributions pay for the program and keep it on the air. You don't have to give much to make a difference. Please make a difference by giving now at WGBHnews.org or call 888-897-9424.
WGBH is funded primarily by listeners. That's why your contribution during the summer membership drive is essential. Please give now by calling 888-897-9424 or sign up online at WGBHnews.org. I'm Maeve Buckley, and I'm joined by Mark Cohen.
And this is it. Your time is running out. Less than 7 minutes to go. We've been talking about the BPR, the Boston Public Radio Obsessed Tote Bag, offered today at a special rate of $12.50 as a sustainer or a one-time contribution of $150. 2 o'clock is the deadline for this. After that, there will be no more Obsessed Tote Bags. That is it. Fin, finito. It's the victory lap. Say goodbye. It's yours. It'll be a collector's item before you know it, and it's on the table for just a little while longer at $12.50 as a sustainer, $150 as a one-time contributor. Please do what you can. Get in on this special deal while there's still just a little time left. The way to do that is to go to the phone at 888-897-9424, or you can check it out online at WGBHnews.org.
And we are still looking for 7 more people to give in the next 6 minutes to meet our hours goal. These hourly goals are extremely important. They help us stay on track to meet the overall goal for this membership drive. Please make your contribution now. You can pick up one of these wonderful Obsessed tote bags, but only for the next about 5 minutes now. Call 888-897-9424 or give online at WGBHnews.org.
You know, you might be thinking to yourself, my financial support won't make that much of a difference. Well, let me tell you, it really, really will. WGBH is funded on the principle that listener support, no matter what the amount, is the most important source of station revenue. You make programming like this possible. Your support is so valuable to the success of WGBH. If you've already made a contribution, thank you so much. If you haven't yet, what are you waiting for? Let's get it going here. On the phone at 888-897-9424, or you can give online securely at WGBHnews.org.
And when you make that gift of support, be sure to ask for the Boston Public Radio Obsessed Tote Bag. You can also see it when you make a gift online as well. We are obsessed with it here, but we are counting down the minutes now, less than 5 minutes to go before 2 p.m. And after 2 p.m. today, it will not be available anymore. The tote features the word obsessed in big, bold quotes on the side, and it is the perfect size for the farmer's market, hauling around your favorite possessions or obsession. So show that you are a fan of Boston Public Radio and your favorite hosts, Jim and Marjorie, by signing up as a sustaining member at just $12.50 a month. We'd love to say thank you with this. You can also make a one-time gift of $150, but time is running out. There are about 4 minutes left to go before this is gone. After 2 p.m., the Obsessed Tote Bag will not be available. So call 888-897-9424 or make your gift of support online at WGBHnews.org.
Just make the next 2 minutes the most productive 2 minutes of your day. Make an ongoing monthly contribution to WGBH by becoming a sustaining member. We don't need a whole lot of information from you, and in just 2 minutes, you can help pay for the NPR news and programs that you depend on. All it takes is $5 or $10 a month, $15, maybe $20, whatever works in your budget will work for us. Or you can make a one-time contribution in whatever amount works for you, maybe $60 or $120. That'll get you in for the, $150 will get you in on the Obsessed Tote Bag, which is running out of time, but you got to make that call. Get the process started. 888-897-9424 or online at WGBHnews.org.
That's right. Listener support is WGBH's most important source of income. It's how the station pays the bills, including the cost of producing Boston Public Radio. So please help us keep this running strong. 888-897-9424 is the number to call, or you can make your gift online at WGBHnews.org.
Less than 3 minutes to go in this hour. Less than 3 minutes to get in on the Boston Public Radio Obsessed Tote Bag. We've been talking about it. You've been taking advantage of this, but if you haven't made that call yet, maybe you're on the fence. Do not wait much longer. Get the process started. It'll make sure you get in before 2 o'clock. And it's only $12.50 as a sustaining member or a one-time contribution of $150. $5. 2 o'clock, though, is when all this just shuts right down. So get that process started, make that first step, and go to the phone at 888-897-9424, or you can go online securely at WGBHnews.org.
Consider the cliche, if you want something done right, you do it yourself. Think about that good friend of yours who thinks public radio is a waste of time. He or she is not going to pay, and others aren't going to pay to keep your NPR and WGBH news on the air. It is up to you to make sure radio is done right. Get that call started, and we can send you that a Boston Public Radio Obsessed tote bag for your gift of $12.50 per month. 888-897-9424. You can make your gift securely online as well at WGBHnews.org.